place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go.
609, good morning, hello, and how are you? Oh, we're playing hurt today. I woke up at 2 a.m. Couldn't stop thinking about the show, the responsibility, all the things we have to accomplish, all the things we try to do.
Wow, the weight of the world. Oh. Doesn't it seem heavier in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
So you had what I call a womp womp, which is you wake up and you can't go back to sleep. Is that it?
Womp womp.
And
womp.
Around 3:45, I was feeling sorry for myself.
Uh-huh.
Little did I know, my man Dave Ennett, he was up before I was.
I was.
Let's go live to the north side, Dave. You were up at 1 a.m. because you're sick?
I was still up at 1, and then I think I dozed off between 1 and 3. I woke up at 3:15, and then
that's because Karen smacked you in the head to knock you out.
Are you coughing?
She did. I wasn't coughing. I'm just...
You can hear him, though. Can't you hear it?
Oh, just, yeah.
It's taken over.
He's
my...
got a cold,
I was fighting it off yesterday, and I was telling myself, it's going to be mind over matter here. I'm not going to give in to this. I woke up yesterday with a sore throat, and I just said, just not going to pay any attention to it.
Do you ever do the coldies?
I did a homeopathic remedy or treatment that did not... obviously worked.
I'm a big believer in labels and marketing. The coldies, the minute you feel the sore throat, anything coming on, you start popping those. No, it'll kill your taste buds for a day or two, but that's okay because you shouldn't taste kale anyway.
Yes.
And you'll feel better.
They say those zinc tablets help too. Something
that's what that
that's
is.
What
coldies
are
zinc. Zinc.
I should have done that.
My mom always said zinc.
In the meantime, if any of you need disinfecting wipes, I have the one-pound container here. I have the tub.
I'd like to, Dave, if you could go in and see Steve, I'd like him to wipe you down like a baby.
Would you like me to go work in my little studio?
No, because you'll doze off.
This is an injury report, but yet we're still here.
Yeah,
we're still playing through.
We're here for you.
Yeah,
I think it's days like this where people go, well, this is why we don't pay for this. This is why this is all free.
Well, do you want some tea, Dave?
Thanks. I'm working on my coffee. And you know what? Here's the thing. I feel bad because I think people who are sick should stay home so they don't make others sick.
Uh-huh.
But it was 1 o'clock in the morning. Who am I going to call at 1 o'clock in the morning?
Well, look at the knucklehead that runs this place now. Mary Sandberg used to produce this show, is now the boss here.
Right. I don't want to call Mary at 1 o'clock in the morning.
No, I'm not saying call her. I'm saying she's the one that has a theory that if you come to work accidentally or intentionally and you expose people to it, then you can't get them sick after that. As long as you run a fever, you are contagious. If you have any sort of elevation in your fever, you are contagious. You know who taught me that? Dr. Kevin Most.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So
I don't think I have a fever.
If you have a fever so it's not just like the very first 3 days you don't feel well?
No, that's a general thing.
I don't know. I think if you sneeze stuff on places and other people touch it, you can get sick way. You
don't.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say if you sneeze stuff on places, maybe clean that up.
Right. You go up to somebody and lick them or something. That's going
to
affect
them. We're trying to limit the licking of other people here.
We had an HR meeting about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. Anyway, Dave, I'm sorry you feel poorly.
Listen, I feel great being here with you guys.
I don't think that's true.
Oh, don't lie. Don't lie, okay? He's going to doze off.
Dave, let me ask you a question. You and I have been friends forever.
Yes, we have.
If you had a choice to be here with us today, right now, at this time, as you are, or be home in bed, what would you choose?
There's no question about it.
He's here.
No, he'd choose to be home in bed because if he didn't, he would be nuts.
But his actions speak for themselves.
His actions speak of someone who's drunk on cold medicine that didn't work.
That's right.
He is the utmost professional. And you too. You're like jet lag.
It's 9 o'clock in the morning. What time is it? It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, your time.
Well, every day you sort of, get a little better.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
You're still high off of the goulash.
But when I woke up at 2, I went, this can't be right. This doesn't seem right. Seems like I'm 2 hours early.
You're like, why am I still not in my Disneyland castle?
Yes, exactly. All right, look, we have much to do today, and Donald Trump will call. That's always good because he checks in once a week. And when Trump calls this morning, we have plenty to talk about.
It's amazing he finds time in his busy schedule for you.
Oh, he's got plenty of time. Yeah. The director of the Chicago Marathon, which is this Sunday, Kerry Pinkowski, is going to be on. Kerry took this thing. The first time Kerry was involved in the Chicago Marathon, they had four people and a case of Old Style. That's all they had. That was the marathon.
Do you know, I covered the first one.
Am I right about this? 8,000 people, or was it less than that?
It was probably somewhere in that area. Yeah. It was 1977. It was the Mayor Daley Marathon.
You covered that?
I did. I covered it. Well, it's a long story.
That was before Joe, Viv, and I were born.
Okay, really?
Okay, now here's the thing. Here's the thing. Dave's sick.
Okay, I'm sorry. I love you, Dave.
Okay. Was that on BBM?
That was.
Okay, I've never understood. I will defend the radio all day long. I have never understood marathon coverage on the radio, ever. Well, they're still running.
Yeah, I did many of them.
Here comes another guy.
A lot of them.
Hey, look at that guy running.
But that one I actually did via a two-way radio. From reports from the course, just by myself. We didn't have any, and now I have a lot of people covering it.
It's just that Dave is so ageless. He's aging, Benjamin Button.
You're being nice to me because I'm sick.
No, you're trying to make up for the fact that you just told him you were not born when he was working professionally in Chicago. I appreciate you not saying you listened to me when you were a child, because I know you didn't. Karen Conti will be with us shortly. After Karen Conti, the president calls in. Kerry Pinkowski. Dean is on this morning, but he's got some TV responsibility. Okay, whatever. But we'll still get a segment of Moron Entertainment out of Dean. Patrick Kane's on this morning at 9:10. And then a young broadcaster named Ro Khan scheduled to appear after 9:30. That's the schedule. Text me yours.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Super Joe, is that just in my headphones, or is that some...
That sounds pretty tinny. I'm not sure why.
We'll get on top of that. White House refused Tuesday, item number one. White House refused Tuesday to turn over internal documents regarding Ukraine that are being sought in a Ukraine phone call sought by House Democrats as the Trump administration dug in against the impeachment inquiry. In a defiant, nonsensical letter that echoed the president's recent impeachment messaging, they accused Democrats of violating the Constitution and civil liberties and attempting to overturn the results of the 2016 election. I don't care who you believe in. If you believe in this country, follow along now. As many of you have already done this homework, but this is important to remember. Article 2, Section 4 of the Constitution says specifically that the House has impeachment power. Therefore, they can convene. They can take evidence in. They can talk about it. They can subpoena. They have the power to do that. There's nothing non-constitutional about this. And as far as overturning the election, that continued harangue. The only people to keep bringing up overturning the election are the people supporting Trump again and again and again. And if you overturn this election, what would happen? Well, you don't impeach Pence. Pence becomes the president. Nothing's overturned. This is what the Constitution has in it. This wasn't written by Nancy Pelosi or anybody else. This is an actual fact. As much as we don't like to deal with facts anymore, that's the fact, Jack. Next. Federal prosecutors said Tuesday they have more than 40,000 pages and 100 disks of evidence in the corruption case against Ed Burke, the most powerful alderman in Chicago, maybe in forever. In a brief hearing before U.S. District Judge Robert Dow, attorneys for Burke and his two co-defendants asked for another 90 days to review the voluminous discovery before setting deadlines for pretrial motions and possibly a trial date. It does not sound good for Mr. Burke. Next, Chicago police officers improperly used department-issued placards to park illegally with their personal vehicles in police station parking lots so they or their friends could attend Cubs and Bears games, an investigation of the city watchdog found. This is not challenging impeachment. These are cops parking in the police parking lot. Now, it goes on to say officers also regularly park their cars in a tow-away zone along a narrow street near City Hall, creating potential safety hazards by blocking fire lanes and emergency exits. This is all according to the Inspector General Joseph Ferguson's office on Tuesday. Am I nuts here? I don't care about this. I want the inspector general chasing down other stuff. I mean, yeah, the cops ought to follow the rules, of course. But I'd like to see the police park where they need to park to get what they need done. And if they take advantage of a work perk, I'm not troubled by that. All right, maybe it's me. Next, Amazon's brand new medical care service, Amazon Care, is officially available to all the Amazon employees that they have at their Seattle location. The service will provide both virtual and in-person health care through a telemedia application. The initiative for this project was first created in 2018 with J.P. Morgan and Berkshire Hathaway collaborated on forming a solution for handling their employers' health care needs. As Dr. Most has told us, this is where it's all headed, where big companies will go ahead and develop in-house health care systems, hire doctors, hire medical people to do it because it's more cost-effective. Why am I telling you about Amazon in Seattle? Because this is what's happening. This is where it's coming. If you work for any major company, you are likely headed for this sort of program. Next, Chicagoans looking to pick up booze on Sunday. Oh, Dave, here's one for you. Chicagoans looking to pick up alcohol on Sunday mornings before a game. Soon we'll have more options. A proposal to loosen restrictions on the sale of alcohol advances. The proposed ordinance approved unanimously by the City Council's Committee on License and Consumer Protection on Tuesday would allow supermarkets between 5 and 10,000 square feet to sell alcohol before 11 a.m. on Sundays.
This is just in the city, though, correct?
Yeah, in the burbs, you can still get your hooch.
Well,
what? I don't know the state law.
I don't either. I mean,
like, if you wanted to go buy booze for a Sunday afternoon party at 9 a.m., could you do it?
No, I don't think so.
When does Jewel sell there?
I've tried to buy it at Jewel before 11 on a Sunday, and you can't.
So 11 o'clock is pretty much everywhere except for what
they're
doing in
Sunday. Yeah, okay. Pretty sure.
Supermarkets over 10,000 square feet already are permitted to sell alcohol starting at 8 a.m. in the city. I don't know if that's in the burbs either. And then there's this. A West Loop restaurant is turning into an Olive Garden. Not that Olive Garden. For Halloween, an Olive Garden is coming October 30th through November 1st. St. Louis Assembly, that's 664 West Lake in the West Loop, transforms into St. Olive's Garden for Halloween. And let's test the Catholics on the show. Mary, you are the designated Catholic spokesperson for the show. St. Olive is the saint of what?
Olives?
Nope, breadsticks. Unending, unlimited breadsticks. You can look it up.
Well, not just any breadstick, Steve. Garlic breadstick.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, St. Crouton. St. Crouton, of course, would be unlimited salad.
He's a very happy person,
his,
St. Crouton.
His crumbs, by the way, are displayed in a venerated...
venerated crumb holder?
Yes.
I'm sorry. It was going well till you couldn't get the end of it.
I started laughing at myself.
There's going to be a Frank Sinatra-style playlist to be playing as people enter and leave, climbing ivy plants, frame photos of the Italian countryside, and so on. Again, it's not an Olive Garden. It's St. Olive's Garden.
Yeah. St. Lou's Assembly, which is like a cafeteria-style throwback, really cool hipster joint.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Well, I did not know
It's fun, yeah. You go in and get a tray, and you walk down the cafeteria line.
Well, look at you.
Yeah.
Filling me in on stuff.
Yeah. You know, I get out and about.
You do. There's no question about it. Some of that's got to stop. It's 627. We'll come back with the headlines shortly. This is 720 WGN.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
I'm sorry. I got caught up in the music. It's 6:37. The Steve Cochran Show continues with Karen Conti. Attorney at Law, where most Wednesdays we say, hi, Karen. How are you?
Good morning, Steve and friends.
Yes. all right. So, Karen Conti, you're on the radio again. When?
I will be on Sunday night from 7 to 9.
Excellent. And you should listen because it's not just a show about the law. You actually talk about life and other stuff.
All kinds of stuff. Health issues, work issues, almost anything that you'd be interested in.
There's an interesting case in the Supreme Court yesterday. We didn't talk about this, and, you know, we do actually do a little preparation for the segment. And we didn't talk about this, but there's an LGBTQ case mm-hmm. that the Supreme Court got and talked about yesterday that could be pretty profound in its effect, as all Supreme Court decisions are, on how discrimination is or isn't handled. And it's interesting, Karen, because you've talked so many times on this show. People can get fired for any reason. But if it smells at all of discrimination based on sexual orientation, that's where the problem comes in, right?
Well, right. And basically, the state courts, the state lawmakers have generally said that that's a protected class. We all know that gender is protected. We know that race and religion and national origin, all of those things are things we can't discriminate based upon. But the Supreme Court of the United States has never really ruled on whether or not a sexual orientation is a protected class. And so so that is going to be a core issue of what their ruling is.
So how does a case get to the Supreme Court? Like, let's say G wants to sue me because she's annoyed with me. You know, what hurdles do you have to pass? Do you just pump it up through the courts and just keep rising until you can actually petition the Supreme Court?
Ways to get there. You can go the state route. So if you have a state case and you don't like the ruling, you appeal to the state appellate court. And from there, you probably go to the Illinois Supreme Court. And from there, you petition the U.S. Supreme Court for a writ of certiorari, which means that the Supreme Court doesn't have to take every case. Just because you asked to have your case appealed there, they do not have to take the case unless it's in a very small defined area. So they decide what to take, and they decide that based upon what they think is important, what they think there might be different states that vary in their opinions, and they want to resolve that dispute among the states. And they take cases that they think that have some lasting impact on the citizens.
And is it the justices themselves that decide which cases they'll hear, or is there a committee, or does it? How does that happen?
No, the justices decide that. It's a big part of it. In fact, you can almost say that that's probably the biggest part that the Supreme Court does, is to pick and choose what cases it's going to decide. They read the briefs, they read the petitions, and there's a decision-making process, and they vote on that, and they decide whether or not to take it. Then they hear the arguments, obviously read the briefs, and then write their opinion.
We got a central topic I want to get to. It's a National Bullying Prevention Month and Anti-Bullying Day. You know, we're talking a lot about whether the teachers are going to strike in Chicago, but bullying is a problem that happens every day in schools all over the country. So we'll get to that in a second. But the big news politically, of course, is the Trump White House continues to say, subpoena, subshmina. They refuse to follow the rule of law, the basic rule of law. And that's, to me, I mean, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, it's bad for everybody.
Well, subpoenas are not optional. And for all of you out there who get a subpoena for one reason or another, to testify in a case or to produce documents, a lot of businesses get hit with subpoenas and divorces and things like that. You gotta comply. And if there's a time deadline, you've got to comply with that. And if you can't, you better call somebody in charge there and tell them you need an extension, because these are things that can get you punished.
So this is easily an article of impeachment. It's one of the articles of impeachment that we're going to be presented against Richard Nixon if he hadn't resigned, obstructing the constitutional duties of Congress. It's an extension of obstruction of justice, I suppose. Having said all that, what happens to people that just don't honor subpoenas, or as brazen as this, say, I'm not going to pay attention to it because you don't have the authority to do that to me?
Sure. Well, the court can sanction you. The court can throw you in jail, technically. The court could force you to produce the documents or appear and testify. And if you don't, they can fine you and issue awards of attorney's fees. Interestingly, in cases like this that involve the executive branch, these cases generally don't go to court. Why? They get resolved. What usually happens is an attorney comes in and says, listen, the president thinks that this is executive privilege because it protects maybe some military secret or some sensitive diplomatic secret that we don't want out there. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you this, that, and the other thing, but we're not going to give you this. And usually that is acceptable, and usually that lets the parties move on without any hoopla, without going to court, without throwing people in jail. That has been done over and over again over the years. Where it came to a head, of course, was the President Nixon situation, where he absolutely refused. It went to the court, and the court said, no, the executive privilege is not absolute, and you do have to produce certain things in certain situations. So this, I think, I mean, my guess is that President Trump is going to probably not compromise and say, I'm not going to produce anything else. And we might just see this go to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, when the president's administration says, and this is directly from the letter, an eight-page letter that was issued yesterday, won't cooperate in an ongoing impeachment inquiry, just not going to do it, then Congress has no other option other than to act by going to court to stop this.
Well, that's right, and the problem
because there's no negotiation going on, as you talked about, other normal assault.
No, there's no negotiation, and I think that would, like, that's what I would do. If I were the attorney there, I would try to work out a deal. Because, listen, some of this has already been disclosed. The transcript of this conversation with the Ukraine president, that's already been disclosed. So it's hard to say that that is a matter of diplomatic secrecy or privacy, because there's already been an exposure of this. So when you have all these other people who are being subpoenaed, it's hard to take the position that this is now somehow protecting our national security. Again, he could parse it in a way that would be palatable, but the fact that he's blanket stating, you know, I'm not going to do that, that could add to the charges of obstruction of justice. So this is a layer of, we're trying to get to something that might be bad, but now you're saying don't testify, and you're telling people to dishonor subpoenas. That adds another layer of bad to this, in my view.
And you can't have any other assumption based on the behavior of this White House for, I don't know, 2 years, longer, that they're trying to hide something. I mean, I don't know. You've represented thousands and thousands of clients. If a client continues to say, well, don't tell them that, well, don't give them that, and at the other, and then continues to say, I'm completely innocent, you can't have it both ways. If you're completely innocent, then present whatever evidence they want.
You know, one would think that, but, you know, I guess I just see, you know, there are certain people that there is no compromise, and it could be that there's nothing here to hide, but President Trump is angry that he's being investigated, and maybe that's rightfully so, but he's taking an extreme position. Again, you're right. The appearance is, if you don't have anything to hide, just testify and show us what you have. On the other hand, that's not his personality. His personality is really, you know, take it or leave it.
Yeah, and that could, and I'm not, you know, being flip when I say this. I mean, it could put him in jail. As a private citizen, all of those alleged constitutional protections go out the window.
I agree. I mean, I think everyone is going to try not to do that. I don't think we want a country with our president in jail, and I don't think, you know, but this is causing quite a distraction, I guess we should say, and it's not good for anybody at all.
I want to talk about bullying when we come back, because, you know, this teacher's contract is very important, but every year we know bullying goes on all the time, and we don't talk about it enough, I don't think. And the text question of the day is simply, do you have a great story about how bullying was handled? I know it's kind of hard to limit that to a text, but if you got a shorter you can tell me about, I'd like to, you know, just point out that there are heroes all over listening to this show right now who don't ask for any recognition, but they ought to be recognized for doing the right thing, whether it's a kid that stands up or a teacher or administrator. 312-981-7200, that's the text line. We'll come back with more with Karen in a second. All right, 6:50, back with Karen Conti. There's some basic bullying questions that spill over into whether or not they're legal issues. You want to tackle a couple of those?
Sure.
All right, so playground talk, mean kids on the playground. When does that become bullying that schools have to address, or are there different policies for different schools?
It's pretty much the same, but each school has a different policy. In fact, each school is mandated to have a policy and procedure defining bullying, having a procedure and a system to handle it, and what the punishments are. And they have to file that with the Board of Education. So that's all accessible at your school. Basically, the definition is, it's a severe and pervasive physical or verbal conduct, okay? So it has to be serious. It can't just be relational, as they call it, which is just name-calling and things like that. And it has to be directed toward a student that could cause fear or have a detrimental effect or interfere with the education process. So really, what we're talking about is intimidation, harassment, humiliation, you know, persistent things like that, including destruction of property, posting things that are detrimental to the student.
And you have to, the posting thing is a big thing now. It wasn't when we were growing up, but it's a huge thing now. Cyberbullying, because, you know, you could get away from a bad day at school by going home, provided your home life was stable. But you at least could get away from the bullies at school. Now, every time you look at your phone or whatever you're using, they're right there again. And it's not as simple as saying, don't look at it. It's not that easy, right?
Well, not that easy, and it can be disseminated to literally thousands of people inside and outside of the school. So, yeah, and it's a very, very serious problem, and those things are defined as well, and there's actual laws about that that could have criminal ramifications, even to minors, if they persist in doing that.
In Illinois, do we have cyberbullying laws?
We sure do, absolutely.
When does it rise to the police get involved in a cyberbullying situation?
You know, they don't really get involved as much with the students just because they have the schools to deal with that and sort of handle that process. And, you know, you've got to go with kid gloves, literally, when you're dealing with kids, of course, because, you know, these are people whose brains are not completely formed yet. And so, you know, you try to give them a second chance, and you don't want to throw them into the criminal justice system because that system just doesn't really work for young people. But when it gets to be to a certain point where it's detrimental and someone's been told to stop and they're not doing it and there's a stalking situation, I mean, children can actually, you know, go to jail for this kind of thing. It's very rare, very rare.
It seems too, Karen, recently in the news, there's been situations where kids have been driven by a bullying situation to a point where they have hurt themselves as a result of that bullying. Is that when, you know, parents can have a legal remedy?
Yeah, I mean, and you've seen those lawsuits. You've seen children, you know, commit suicide, and there have been lawsuits not only against the students who have perpetrated it, but the schools for not handling it. You know, that's kind of a new way of dealing with it. It's, you know, one thing I want to say about this, and it's kind of off topic, but I've read a lot about the studies about reporting bullying. And there, again, I'm not saying not to report bullying, but there are studies that show that you should really try first, unless it's very, very serious, to have your child handle it before you start reporting it. And they give you the example of if you have a neighbor who's playing loud music, and, you know, what should you do? Should you go next door and ask them to turn it down because you want to sleep? Or do you immediately report it to the police and make a criminal complaint? You know, you try to handle those things first by directly dealing with the perpetrator. And the kids need to learn to do that. And the problem is that when you report it to the school, the studies show it gets worse. Hmm. Almost always it gets worse.
But so, I don't understand that, because you report it to the school and the school does their job, then it shouldn't get worse because they should be on the case. Are they too understaffed to handle it?
Well, it's not just that. So you tell the kids to stop doing it, and the parents get mad, and then the child is shunned, and then he sits alone at lunch. I mean, you know, all of those things can happen. So the school can bring it to everyone's attention and tell people to be nice, but now they're in trouble, now they're angry, and now, you know, they're not going to be friendly to the kid who made that report. So, you know, if you read those studies, they're really disturbing, because the reporting of this is not necessarily, and I'm not talking about someone being stalked or, you know, someone being physically harmed. I mean, those are things that need to be reported right away. But I'm talking about the relational things, like,
yeah, your kid's
fat,
a jackass,
you're ugly.
Yeah, in school, and yeah. You don't, you, as a parent, you allow it to happen, or you look the other way, or you're not paying enough attention. But, you know, the kid ought to be able to go to the administration at school and have some safe resolution to this, or at least an attempted resolution, including the fact that they're ostracized at lunch or the place. I mean, you know, I always say this to parents. Remember what it felt like to be 8 or 9 mm-hmm. or 10 or 12 or whatever. I mean, think about what you felt like. What would be more scary if you were a little kid than you were being bullied than to get up and go to school the next day? It's a big deal.
Well, it's your entire world. It makes you, I mean, it feels like your world is ending.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's everything, even though it's in, you know, retrospect, it's small. But for you, for a little kid, it's huge. It's their entire life.
Should you talk to the other parents?
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I mean, from the studies that I've seen, I think that's probably the best way to do it. Instead of reporting it and making it into an issue that now goes into discipline and suspension and goes on permanent records, everyone gets their backup, they get defensive. You know, just maybe, you know, first have your child just say, please don't do this, and, you know, let's be friends, and do all those coping mechanisms that we as human beings need to learn to go out in the working world, right? And then go to the parents and say, listen, this is what's going on. I really like it to stop. Can we have our kids together, and can we have them not do this anymore? I think that's a perfectly good solution to that. Again, if it doesn't work and the parent resists, then you have the school to deal with. But again, the teachers are not trained. There's no mandatory training for bullying in Illinois. So it's not like the teachers don't try. Teachers are very good people, but they're not trained in how to undo this kind of bad relationship type of thing. And they're not going to be there to protect your child every step of the way. So once you've made these claims, it escalates.
We don't have time to even do anything other than scratch the surface here, but don't allow it to continue. It's the lifetime damage from bullying that goes on. And don't assume your kid's, you know, completely innocent of this. Mm-hmm. And if you got a kid that stands up to bullies, make sure you tell them what a big deal that is and show them appreciation for it. Kara, thanks for all that. See you on the radio Sunday night.
That's right, from 7 to 9.
All right, there you go. That's Karen Conti. Karen Conti, attorney at law. All of us here on the show, whenever we're arrested, we use Karen Conti.
She's so great. Great number to have.
We're less than a minute away from the news here. There's a website that's being recommended. I have not looked at it, the screen, but it's called radkids.org. RADKIDS.org. Take a look at that, G. I want to make sure we're not recommending something that we shouldn't, but that's from a helpful listener, and I'm sure it's the right answer.
Yeah, it looks good. Personal empowerment, safety education.
Radkids.org. Just one resource possibly for you. And 847, Karen is right on the bottom. Tattletales get picked on all the time. I don't know. We got to find a way to not be the case where kids are trying to help. They shouldn't be being picked on. All right, news now, and then the president calls.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Patrick Kane's coming on the show later this morning. Kaner's on, you know, semi-regularly, right?
Yes, yes.
That's a big deal.
Kaner's great. He's great.
He is.
I found a picture of him yesterday on the show from the old Tribune Tower from 2008, right after he won the Calder Trophy for Rookie of the Year. I mean, you know, it's amazing how different both of our hair look then.
Yeah, right.
So
describe it.
I got to say, he's aged better than I have.
He also had the peach fuzz going back then.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because they weren't a playoff team in 2007, 2008, I don't think.
No, 2009.
Yeah, that was the breakthrough year.
Yeah.
So there was no playoff beard, but then he started the peach fuzz.
Yes.
So, anyway, Kaner will be on later talking about the opener tomorrow night that Dave alluded to. At 7:09, the Steve Cochran Show. Happy to have you, of course. Thank you for listening every single morning. Carrie I was going to say Carrie
Pinkowski.
Yeah, that's not Carrie Pinkowski.
Later loser.
Marathon later. Yeah.
Later loser.
Mr. President, let me grab it. good morning, Mr. President. How are you today?
Good morning, Cochran. Great to be on the air with me again. Hey, I've got good news for a change.
Well, we could use some of that. What is it, sir?
The McRib is back for a limited time in McDonald's. At least now I can enjoy a tremendous lunch in between doses of presidential harassment.
Excuse me, sir, but I have taken the liberty of ordering lunch in advance today. The McRibs will be here during your late morning executive time at 11 a.m.
Always thinking ahead, Mike Pence. Keep that up, and I might not throw you under the bus on Ukraine.
Oh, thank you, sir.
He really is a good soldier, isn't he? Wow.
He's great.
Wouldn't it be weird if you're in D.C., Dave, where you grew up and you saw Mike Pence in line buying McRibs?
Yeah, it right? really would be.
Listen, Mr. President, a second whistleblower has now come forward claiming firsthand knowledge of the allegations listed in the first whistleblower complaint. There's a lot going on here. Are you concerned?
You know, Halloween's 3 weeks away. I still haven't seen anyone selling a sexy whistleblower costume.
Yeah, well, maybe it's out there.
These whistleblowers are fake news, Cochran. I mean, anyone can say they're a whistleblower. Do you know how easy it is to get a whistle? So easy. You ever see the football referees with their whistles?
It's not the same.
They get the call completely wrong half the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just because you have a whistle doesn't mean you know what the hell you're talking about.
Okay.
Such a witch hunt. I mean, can we just talk about how crazy this is for a minute? The last whistleblower had secondhand knowledge. This whistleblower has firsthand knowledge. And I'm betting the next whistleblower will have psychic knowledge of the allegations. You know, as in predicting the allegations before they even come out. So sad.
In a weird way, that'd be cool. So, you've tweeted that you deserve to meet your accuser, but whistleblowers are protected under the law. They're supposed to be able to remain anonymous.
I don't care what the law says, Cochran. I deserve to meet my accuser. I mean, what is this, that TV show, The Masked Singer, where I got to wait 7 weeks until I find out it's Joey Fatone singing Mambo Number 5 in a baby kangaroo costume?
Sir, over the weekend you tweeted about Nancy Pelosi, that she ought to be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, maybe even treason. Seems like you're deflecting, sir. What's happening?
You forgot to mention her most serious offense of all, walking around every day in public with that mound of lumpy clay underneath her chin where her neck's supposed to be.
Nice.
Look, Nasty Nancy committed treason. She's betrayed our country time and time again by doing things like criticizing me, belittling me, accusing me of committing impeachable acts simply because I admitted to doing them. All that's treason. She's got to go, Cochran. Matter of fact, I'm no longer recognizing Pegrosi as Speaker of the House. From now on, we're going to call her that creepy old lady who looks like her face is always pressed up against the storm door.
Wow. Wow, that's mean. The other Democrat leader who you said ought to be questioned for fraud and treason is the Intel Committee Chairman, Adam Schiff. You still on that page?
Don't get me started on Shifty Schiff. Look, I don't want to say he has a skinny neck, but his nickname in college was the pipe cleaner.
No, it wasn't. No.
He can't find shirts that fit because he wears a size extra dweeb. I mean, how could anybody trust this guy, Cochran? He looks like Kevin Spacey's younger and somehow much creepier brother. He really does.
You tweeted that you have, and I'm quoting you directly here, sir, great and unmatched wisdom. Do you stand by that?
I'm glad you got that quote right. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm the wisestest guy there is. The wisiest. Tremendous wisdom. Why do you think they always compare me to the other wise guys in New York? I'm like the Wizard of Oz, Cochran. Well, the wizard from the first half of the movie.
That was the tougher one, yeah. Look, let me shift gears on you because I know how much you love the pop culture. There's a hot movie. There's a hot movie out right now. It might even be the number one movie at the box office. Talking about Joker, the movie. Are you into that stuff?
Great movie, Cochran. It really was. And who better to portray the Joker than Joking Phoenix? I mean, the title's in his name, for crying out loud.
Sir, I believe it's pronounced Joaquin.
Don't correct my brilliant use of the Mexican language, Mike. Poor favor.
My apologies, El Jefe.
That means the boss, Cochran. Did you know that?
Yeah, actually, I took 2 years. But back to the Joker. You liked it overall?
You know, I haven't seen a crazy guy running around torturing people wearing that much makeup since Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars the other night.
Well, see, we can always find a point we agree on. Mr. President, have you reached out to Senator Bernie Sanders, who had a heart attack last week?
You know what? I haven't, but I like Crazy Bernie. I really do, and I'd love to send him a message sometime soon.
Well, sir, we've got a little surprise. The Steve
what?
Cochran Show exclusive.
What are you talking about?
On the other line, live from Vermont, is Senator Bernie Sanders. Senator, hello. How are you recuperating, sir?
Hello, Steve. Thank you for having me on. I feel like $1 million that was redistributed among the struggling middle class. That's great. And I just want everyone to know, this wasn't as serious as the media reported, okay? They only had to revive me once, maybe twice at the most. And I can tell you that the top 1% of my ventricles in my heart are now completely clear, and I'm ready to move forward with my campaign.
Okay, well.
Isn't he great, Cochran? He'll be lucky to make it to Christmas. He really will. Crazy
true.
Bernie, I'm so glad you're okay. I mean, it's hard to believe that a 93-year-old man like you who eats pastrami and brisket for breakfast would have serious health problems. I mean, who knew?
I don't eat pastrami and brisket for breakfast together. I alternate every other day. All right, let's get that straight. The point is, everybody deserves to not have to pay through the nose for the use of defibrillator paddles when experiencing a cardiac emergency, not just the fat cats on Wall Street.
Well, thank you. I don't want to put a lot of stress on you at this time, Mr. Sanders.
Wow.
Thank you,
Senator.
Getting
him excited.
Yes, thank you for calling. And by the way, President Trump, thank you for calling as well.
Feel the burn, Chicago, just not in your chest area.
Later, loser.
Look at all we got in there. I mean, you had the vice president, the president, and then Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders.
Your booking power amongst politicians is unreal.
Vivian was on the air all day yesterday trying to get Senator Sanders on.
My goodness.
Yeah, nice job.
Wow.
She nailed that. I think she finally found a Greek. You know, and she negotiated it. Somebody in Bernie's pipeline with some Greek ancestry. That's what
yes.
it took.
The problem she knows all the Greeks.
The problem with pastrami for breakfast is you do occasionally do get some burn from that. It's hard to tell. I know I've had that for breakfast before. And it's,
wow. I've
isn't
never,
pastrami,
I've never...
chemically, isn't pastrami 99% salt? Isn't that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Like ham.
No.
Oh. I never thought of feel the burn in that way.
No,
so I'll never be able to forget it now.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
There's people clamoring for the new Starbucks Michigan Avenue to open. It'll be the largest Starbucks in the world, Starbucks Chicago Roastery. I got to tell you, couldn't be less interested. But that's because I don't drink coffee.
You don't drink coffee at all.
No.
Or beer.
See, I don't drink it either, and I really don't care.
Yeah. 42,000 square feet.
Oh.
It's a coffee emporium.
It's like state of the art, right?
What was there before? Was that the Crate and Barrel?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a glassy four-story building. It's the chain's sixth and final reserve roastery, and I believe the biggest. I think that's right. Open late to the into the night. 200 employees.
Wow.
And one Starbucks.
Well, that's good. That's jobs.
Yes.
And they still pay health insurance, right, I think?
I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah, don't know. Anyway, the world's largest Starbucks is scheduled to open at 9 a.m. on November 15th. And the good news is they were going to open at 10. So it's an hour earlier.
Are they going to even have a doctor on premise? Location?
That kind of crowd's coming through there, I would think, right? And don't you think they got to have some big gift shop? Some big thing where you buy not just coffee mugs. What does Starbucks sell? They sell coffee mugs, right?
They do.
Yeah, they sell all kinds of stuff. Like at the holidays, they'll have like little Christmas mugs.
Yeah,
and
they have
Christmas
ones that say Chicago on
yeah.
them.
Yeah. Yeah, can you imagine what's going to be in this joint with 48,000 square feet of space? Here's what else they're going to have. They'll sell their reserve beans.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I was in a band called the Reserve Beans. I think you guys probably remember that. There's going to be interactive tours of the entire place, including backstage. I don't know if they show you the supply room. Exclusive drinks inspired by the culture and traditions of Chicago. What are they going to have, like a Dillinger, a Capone? What are they going to have? I don't get it. Cocktails in a full kitchen. They'll make desserts, breads, pizzas, and salads, along with a partnership from the Italian bakery. Or is this their bakery? Princi would be Italian, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that Starbucks bakery or is that somebody else?
I don't. It's Starbucks backed okay. Italian bakery concept. So,
I just want you to know, 9 a.m. November 15th, not 10 a.m. They've actually issued a press release. They're going to be open at 9 a.m.
I am excited about this. I know you guys aren't excited, but for me, and I love all the smaller coffee roasteries in town, too. But I think this is going to be cool. It'll be cool for the tourists. And the part that I really am excited about, and maybe Dave is in with me on this, is the mixology beverages, because a lot of them are going to be paired with local mixologists and bartenders in town. So like it's going to be all locally independent restaurants that are behind a lot of the specialty drinks.
I like the cocktails, so, yeah.
Yeah.
I might head over for that.
Okay.
And a pizza.
Perfect, yes.
I don't understand how that works, though, as a couple. Let's say you want to go in for coffee,
mm-hmm.
and he or she wants to go in for booze, so you're going to be wide awake to see what a jerk they are? I don't understand the combination there. How does that work?
I think it works out. Okay. Yeah, you both get your fix in a different way.
Yeah, one drink doesn't make you a jerk.
No.
I'm actually a very happy. I get very happy and lovey. I get lovey-dovey. Oh,
okay.
I still would be just fine getting my
pumpkin spice latte?
Cafe Americano or my Misto. Okay.
You know, it'd be fun to drive through on Michigan Avenue because that wouldn't slow down traffic.
No, not at all.
And they do have tea there.
Yeah.
So you can get tea.
All right.
We can get the tea, Steve.
Anyway, what day of the week is November 15th? Is that a weekend? It's got to be a weekday, right? They wouldn't open on a
weekend. November 15th is a Friday.
Well, I think we should take the day off.
You're not a coffee
guy. I think we should do a remote there.
We should all just take the day off, go over there, get some coffee, some beer.
Or G can report live there at 9 a.m.
Oh, I'm happy to do that.
And
are
then
you
bring
kidding?
Back and then bring
I'd back.
I'd have a cocktail, a coffee, and a pizza.
So let's work on that today. Backstage at the Steve Cochran Show live show meeting. Let's see if you can be. I'm sure you have to be credentialed. You can't just walk into that Starbucks, you know, because you have
to try
because you drink coffee.
If you have a Starbucks card,
yeah, everybody else will be doing that because they drink coffee.
Yeah, but we want G in there early.
I mean, the beautiful thing about radio, though, is do I need to? I mean, you can just walk in with a phone, right? Because you don't have a television
camera
with you.
Yeah, but it's going to be a zoo. It's going to be a zoo, so you want to be credentialed so you can go over early and talk to some of the 200 employees and see how hopped up on beans they are. Can you imagine those people? They're probably being forced to drink extra strong coffee all morning just so they're going to be crazy pleasant.
You just think about any of the stores, the big flagship stores on Michigan Avenue. That's a lot of work. Like, even think about the Nutella store. The Nutella store is also fabulous. Did you get your Nutella fix?
I don't do Nutella.
Oh.
You know, as much of a chocolate nut as I am, wouldn't you think I do Nutella?
You don't like the hazelnut? Are you not a hazelnut?
It's fine. I just haven't had an opportunity to try it. I guess I always wrote Nutella off as a kid thing, but it's not, is it?
You seem like a hazelnut to me.
That's right. I am. And duly noted. All right. That's all your good news. Unfortunately, we have bad news to report this morning. No. There's a new book out from Ronan Farrow called Catch and Kill. Ronan Farrow has done, and Steve, see if, I don't know if you agree with this, I think he's done some tremendous journalism.
Yeah, some unbelievable investigative journalist. You're right.
Yeah, following all the fundamentals. At any rate, former NBC News employee Brooke Nevels claims in a new book that Matt Lauer, in fact, raped her in a hotel room in 2014 in Sochi during the Olympics then. She worked for Lauer at the time, or I'm sorry, she worked for Meredith Vieira at the time, but worked closely with Lauer as well, says they were out drinking. Vieira, she, and Matt Lauer. Matt Lauer asked her up to her room. She said they had had friendly exchanges before, thought nothing of it. She had had quite a bit to drink, and he sexually assaulted her, forced himself on her. Now, here's where it gets weird. Durr. She also says they then engaged, that was not consensual. She says after that, they then engaged in several consensual sexual encounters. Once in the room, she says Lauer pushed her onto the bed, and she said she declined him several times, and then he forced himself on her. So here's where it's a problem. No means no, no matter when no happens. There's no exception to that. No is no. But, and I'm not just talking about the legal side of this, am I crazy to think she's made this whole thing worse because she then went back into some sort of transactional sexual relationship with him? This was after the attack.
Well, what happens in a lot of cases of abuse, from what I've read, is that sometimes after the abuse incident happens, the victim feels as though it's already happened, and then psychologically they enter this cycle of trauma because it's already happened. So, like, why not go ahead and give in to it continuing? It's a whole psychological
issue. But don't you have to be... isn't it possible that the other side of that comes up too, where you're so angry and so? I guess where I'm going with this is this: we need women to have the courage and the support they need, and the support comes first. We need women to have the support they need to have the courage to step up and say, "This happened to me. I want this guy arrested. I want this ended today."
And with the imbalance of power in that situation, and just how extraordinarily powerful he was, and she was a subordinate, and also thank goodness for the Me Too movement, which Ronan Farrow really helped get going. I think women in the past didn't feel comfortable coming forward because most of the times women's allegations weren't listened to. But I think psychologically in this case, yes, it's very complicated, but I have heard situations where women were either sexually assaulted or molested or raped by somebody, and then they tended to go back to that person because of a psychological issue. And, you know, women that are even married can also be raped.
Well, that's
as
the
well.
Thing. Look at people who are married. That
absolutely. No means no. It doesn't matter what you're, whether you're married to the person or dating the whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Whenever no happens, it's no.
Absolutely.
I just wish he hadn't been involved with him after.
I agree.
All right. We got to get to the headlines. We'll come back. More of this. Texters 312-981-7200.
That day on. If I was going somewhere, I was running.
The Steve Cochran Show.
There is no better marathon on the planet than the Chicago Marathon. How do I know that? Well, because Kerry Pinkowski, the Chicago Marathon race director, has told me that for the last, I don't know, 20 years that we've talked about this. And I agree. As you know, I am a spectator because I don't want to show up the Kenyans who continue to win. How are you, man?
I'm good, Steve. Thanks for having me on this morning. It's good to see my old friend Dave Ennett here. We go back a long way.
Yes, we do.
We're talking about the first marathon, which Dave covered, and you've told this story before, but how many, Kerry, were in the first marathon?
I think we had a little under 4,000.
4,000.
And I don't know how many finished. So those records are a little sketchy.
That's fewer than I remembered. Seemed 4,000. That was the Mayor Daley Marathon,
yeah.
1977.
4,000 people will be in line for the bathroom.
Right.
Exactly.
Sunday.
Yeah.
What do we know about the weather for Sunday?
It's looking pretty good. I mean, obviously, it's cooled off. What a beautiful morning this morning we have as you look out over the lake. We're monitoring that. Obviously, our team is getting updates, and we might have a little bit of breeze, so we'll pay attention to that. But
well, what's perfect
dry.
Weather for the marathon?
A day like today is perfect. You know, it's in the low, high 40s, low 50s, no wind, hopefully a little cloud cover, little or no humidity.
And is that when you get records or potential for record-breaking runs?
It is. And also, it's the chemistry of the competition. If the athletes are in that mindset and want to go fast, and if there's front runners that want to run against guys that like to finish strong, so that chemistry in combination usually works.
Who's the best American right now? Male and female.
Galen Rupp is probably the best American, definitely the best American. He's coming off some surgery last year. He won the year before, uh-huh. And then had surgery. I ran this in 2018, had some surgery. So this is his first big race back since having his Achilles operated on. So we'll see where he's at. And then he'll go on to the U.S. Olympic trials in February.
How about on the women's side? American.
Got to go with Jordan Hesse. Jordan, 2 years ago, she ran the fastest time ever run by an American woman here in Chicago, 2 hours, 20 minutes, and 40 seconds.
That's so crazy.
Wow.
Faster than Dina Castor or Joan Samuelson or any of those iconic athletes. So, and she seems to be in good form. We've got the U.S. Olympic trials in February coming up and then on to Tokyo, so there's a little bit of gamesmanship. So I think she'll be representing the United States.
And I assume the Kenyans are still your favorites? Not your favorites, but the favorites?
Well, our defending champion is an Englishman, Mo Farah. And, right.
Yeah, but we consider that an anomaly.
Well, and he's going to be going up against a gentleman named Lawrence Chirono, who was obviously Kenyan, who won the Boston Marathon. So I think those are the two to watch on the men's side.
Dave?
45,000 runners? I mean, that's just...
It's literally 10 times plus what it was on the first marathon.
I mean, think about it. It's more than you could put into either ballpark in town, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's in you know, some of the others, the impressive figures are we have 13,000 volunteers that'll support the event. If you know, we have just the crowds that come out and support the event. So we're celebrating our 42nd running of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. So it has grown the support here in the city, the demand and popularity. We're very fortunate.
Are they the entrants and the amateurs we're talking here, and just the runners who you see every morning on the lakefront, it strikes me when I'm out running on the lake, they are in much better condition. They are much better runners. They kind of have the mechanics down, where maybe in the early years of the marathon, you go out and jog and, hey, let's go try this. But sure. The people are so finely tuned now. Has there been a big difference in that area?
Well, you know, back then it was the loneliness of the long distance runner. You'd see one person, you know, by himself, solitary, you know, going up the path. But it's become a social phenomenon. There's no doubt about it. You see the groups, the hundreds of people that are training. I think the charity program that we've developed and partnered with over the years is a big part of that. But people have discovered running. It's still an accessible, a simple form of exercise, especially in this day with your time that's so crazy and everything swirling around, you can still get out and run. And the ultimate expression of running is the marathon, and it's in your backyard here, so why not?
You mentioned the amount of volunteers that you have. I mean, just to wrap our heads around what a huge operation this is, how many, you know, medical personnel do you have to have? How many, you know, policemen are involved? Like, what?
Well,
give us some numbers. Yeah,
our medical support team is coordinated by Dr. George Champas, who's with Northwestern. We'll have about 2,000 medical personnel that are distributed at the start and finish line. Obviously, they're looking after our finishers, but we also have them located on 21 locations on the course. Our EMT guys, our ambulances, all the stuff that goes into that. It's really is a lot of moving parts, and it's a big undertaking.
I've got some numbers from your team. You ready?
Yeah.
12,000 plus race day volunteers. Those are the volunteers. That's three times the size of your original race number.
Right.
140,000 health and fitness expo attendees. You'll have the 1,500 medical personnel, as you said, start and finish, but 400 will be on the course.
Right.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, you should be proud of that. Those are impressive numbers.
They are. And that just goes to show you the support. I mean, it's amazing the energy and people that want to participate in the event. So it's amazing.
Just really quick, do you change up the path every year or no?
We made some adjustments last year on the route. Went a little bit farther north up to Sheridan Road and took a couple of turns out in one little hill where we go behind a little rise there where we go behind the merchandise mart. But it's pretty well set. Like the way it works. Great tour of the city. And the great thing about the Bank of America Chicago Marathon route is that it is convenient. We start and finish in Grant Park. The Park District has been amazing. Great tour of the city, architecture, neighborhoods, really the fabric of Chicago. But it's really accessible for friends and family members, loved ones.
It's a great watch.
You can get to different locations. You get to Chinatown, go up north,
yeah,
all, and come back and to our Runner Reunite area.
And what that means to the runners, you can't really put that into words, because I know that I've heard this from so many people who've run the marathon. It means so much to them just to see the people lining whatever street they're on, whatever neighborhood they're in.
Going bananas, yeah.
And if you are following one of your members, which I did one year, I followed my son and my daughter, and oh my gosh, I was exhausted at the end. I felt like I ran a marathon just running around public transportation and my bike, too.
Sure, and that's the beauty of our partnership with the CTA. You can get to different locations. I've had people tell me they've got to 5, 6, 7 locations on the course, so it's a real adventure for friends and family members, loved ones, significant others, and you get to discover the city and be part of that energy.
When we come back, I'm going to ask you a question I've never asked you before, and that is, what is your day like on race day? Because you work on this year-round. And on race day, do you get the exhale? Things like that. So we'll sure. get to that.
He runs
in a second.
It. He runs it, and he runs it while he's running.
Oh, is he the guy?
I wish I yes. would. Yeah.
Is he the guy in the Willis Tower suit that runs the entire race?
It's him.
We'll take a break. Come back in 312-981-7200. Take a couple listener questions from the texters.
Sure.
All right. 312-981-7200. I like how I asked that in a position where he couldn't possibly say no. It's 7:47. The Bank of America Chicago Marathon. It's this Sunday. We'll talk more about it in a second on 720 WGN.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, we got to fly through this fairly quickly. Carrie Pinkowski's here, director of the Bank of America Chicago Marathon. I gave Carrie an idea a year ago, 2 years ago. I said, wouldn't it be fun during a race if you moved a few pylons and changed the course the way you wanted it to be? And he said, no, Steve, this is why I don't return your phone calls. But we have a bunch of people that are texting in with questions. Before we get to that, what is your day like on that day? Because you plan all year long. Do you relax on that day?
You know, everything is pretty in place. We got pretty much in place for me. I interact with our city officials, some of the department leaders and stuff like that. We have a roll call, and there's a final touch base. I do a couple of sponsorship related things, some media things, but everything's in place. I mean, obviously, I'm in our forward command area there, and getting updates on what's going on event day. But if everything goes according to plan, I should have a very uneventful, kind of calm day and just enjoy.
Isn't it funny?
I don't get to see much of the race. I'm interacting with a lot. I get a lot of data, a lot of updates on how things are progressing. Obviously, our medical director updates us and
sure.
city agencies. So it's just monitoring that and making some comparisons. And if we need to make some adjustments, working through that process.
A couple of textures here. My son's cross-country team is volunteering. Mile marker 11. It's my third kid volunteering for the marathon. I know you appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Runners, make sure you have your name on your shirt so we can cheer you on. And don't think just because you've got a bright orange shirt, you're the only one.
Exactly.
Something that identifies you.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Bob. Hey, Steve. Way to go.
A giant.
The Willis Tower on your hat.
Yeah. Or a giant babushka. Right. You know, running in something that's fun. And the other people I wanted to recognize, too, are the Pacers.
Sure.
Because the Pacers, in a lot of cases, they run a portion of this backwards holding a sign.
Yeah.
These are great athletes.
Well, we have a pace team obviously up front we have guys that are going to take some of our lead athletes out at hopefully course record pace. But we also have a group that paces our 3 hour, 4 hour, 5 hour. A lot of our participants have a goal. They may want to break 5 hours or 6 hours. So we've got a very dedicated group of pace teams led by a gentleman, Paul Miller. He's done it for years for us. And they meet at the expo, and they get a bib with their pace, and they put it on the back, and then they get together at the start, and then they go on their mission of whether it's 4 hours or 3 hours or 6 hours, and try and get that, and it creates a real camaraderie.
Speaking of the time, G, you brought up something off the air.
I did. I said, what's the longest someone can take to run the marathon, just in case I consider running it one day?
Well, we try to get everybody in by nightfall. That's the goal. But
on nightfall Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we 6.5 hours, 6.5 hours after our last participant crosses the start line. That's where we time everybody and get their results into the Tribune for our printing. on Tuesday. I'm sorry, on Monday. But the course stays open. You know, obviously, we want to try to get the streets back to normal procedures, so you can go up on the sidewalk like if you were going to run today. But we have a team that's at the finish line.
Is there a legendary story of a final finisher over these 40-plus years?
I can. A couple of times I've been sitting at 8, 9 o'clock at night with a refreshment, and someone will come in and, you know, say, I just finished the marathon.
That could be me.
Did they ask for later. A banana? You know, where are all the bananas?
Right, where, do you have any bananas left? So I think they stopped and had lunch and dinner and breakfast and on the way shopped a little bit.
I asked you about the economic impact and then you mentioned the charitable impact that the marathon has.
Charity's a big deal, right?
It's a big part of what we do. We're going to have over 11,000 runners this year that are running for over 160 charities. In 2018, we raised $22.8 million for those associated charities. So it's a big part of what we do, philanthropic part of it. Bank of America has been a big proponent of that and supporter of that, and we exceed our numbers every year, which is great.
This is a great story. When my son-in-law, this is another texter from the 847, when my son-in-law ran the marathon, we had a huge sign that said, "Run, Kevin, run." A man walked up and stood by the sign with us. It was Gary Sinise. Everybody comes out to the marathon. You're Gary Sinise, just out there watching.
Wow. You meet some celebrity. Absolutely.
So maybe G wants to do the half marathon next year. You're starting a half marathon?
We are. We're going to, our group, you know, all the years I've done this, Dave, people have come to me and say, why didn't you do a half marathon? The marathon just seems a little too much for me. I run in the Shamrock Shuffle. So June, our team is going to produce a half marathon. We're very excited about it. Support of Bank of America.
Cool.
We're going to do it on the west side. We're traditionally here on the lakefront. We're going to move over to the west side. And we'll use Union Park and really discover some of those areas over that way and celebrate and maybe this will be a pathway for people to really think about the marathon,
to test and see how many choices they're going to regret in their life, or is this the track they want to be on? Well, I know how busy you are, so I appreciate you coming over and doing
pleasure.
This.
Good seeing you guys.
Your work starts again tomorrow, or I should say Monday on next year. I don't think you take a whole bunch of time off, though you should. But people now need to understand that 45,000 people are just the ones that get in. And don't dawdle on this when you have a chance to sign up, right? You got to be ready to go.
Sure. What we try to do is create a pathway for our participants. Obviously, there's a selection process. There's a lot of people that apply. But we recognize our legacy runners that have run 5 out of the last 10 years. There's a time qualifier. And also, you can run for the charities. There's always an access into the marathon if you run for one of our wonderful charities.
The charity part's a big deal. So that can get you in. Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on. This
have a great day, Sunday. And I've decided again to skip this year, but one of these years I'm out there with you.
We're going to start working on you. Yeah. Well, you could come down to the finish line and have breakfast, you know. How's that?
It's a good talk. That's why you're the director. I didn't have a chance to get to many of these texts, but I did print them out and pass them on to Carrie, so you'll be able to see these. And hi to Kelly Devine Rickert, one of the fine volunteers working one of the areas as well, and all you volunteers who are getting it done. Dean will join me after the news for more on entertainment. That news I speak of, well, that starts right about now.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than one match.
Dean Richards live from Channel 9. All right, I understand we're in a time crunch. Who do you have to talk to that's more important than we are?
A kid who plays the drums while standing on his head.
All right, well, you didn't say it was that big. Okay. I mean, that I understand.
I didn't want to make you jealous for the incredible guest get that we got.
And Dean, the band director of that kid is my son-in-law, Johnny.
Oh, we know Johnny.
Yes, Johnny's been here before. So say hi to
Antioch?
Yes, from Antioch High School. He's the band director.
All right. Does your son-in-law make all the kids stand on their head when they play the instruments?
I don't know. He said this kid wanted to. I guess he's a senior, and I said, I hope he's a light kid.
Can you imagine playing the tuba in that position? That'd be difficult.
It's not just a one-man process, Steve.
No.
It's the kid that's the drummer who climbs up on a buddy of his upside down.
Yeah.
And then so he's dangling by like his legs are around his buddy's shoulders,
sure,
hanging upside down. And then
you wonder why women think we're idiots.
Two other buddies are holding the drum kit upside down, mm-hmm. and he's able to play magnificently.
I'm sure he's a great kid.
Takes the whole percussion team. Yep.
Yeah, they should be very proud of him at Antioch.
Say hi to Johnny.
Quite an academic program they've got going on.
All right, now we don't have time to get to all the show business news, but I will tell people that you're talking about the Ellen George W. Bush thing this morning. You're also talking about the Miley Cyrus situation.
In the hospital.
Apparently she's going to be okay. But tell everybody the Matt Lauer story.
Well, there is a new book that's out this morning that's written by Ronan Farrow that alleges that in 2014, Matt Lauer raped a former Today Show journalist while they were covering the Olympics in Sochi. The journalist was actually working for Meredith Vieira at the time, but everybody gets together at the hotel bar later on. Some drinks were had. Matt Lauer invited the journalist up to his room. She went and was intoxicated, but discloses to Ronan Farrow that while she was up there, was raped by him, was too drunk to have been able to consent to anything. There's been no comment from Lauer, no comment from NBC. But this new book by Ronan Farrow is supposed to be a real tell-all about behind the scenes at NBC and the Today Show in particular during the Matt Lauer days.
And Ronan Farrow, as we've spoke about last hour here, proven himself to be a very diligent journalist in getting to the bottom of these really ugly stories.
Yeah, exactly right. He was really one of the ones that broke open the Harvey Weinstein accusations that kicked off the Me Too movement. So he's been very involved in that. He's been also saying for a very long time, he's been alleging, the difficulties of sexual abuse in his own family with his mother, Mia Farrow, and his stepfather at the time, Woody Allen. So,
it's a bad story, but a story that needs to be told for a number of reasons. You can choose not to read it or consume it if you don't want. But I think he's doing a service here as much as selling a book.
This allegation that's in this new book is a multi-leveled one because, I mean, you know, we've been just talking about it in the office. And people have been saying, well, why did she go up to his room? Why did she go up to his hotel room? I don't know. I don't know what the answers are to this. If you've had too many drinks, why do you do a lot of things? But that doesn't give somebody the right to rape somebody else.
Of course not.
Just because they're intoxicated.
Well, the bigger question, too, and I'm sure this came up in the newsroom as well, is she had then had a consensual relationship with him after as well. Again, it doesn't excuse the initial act. It just gives ammunition to people that go, well, that's what you get. Yep. And obviously there's something else involved here.
Yeah, there's a lot more to the story than that, of course.
Meanwhile, you have to go because you got somebody on their head playing drums.
Very, very important. I also have very important journalistic work to do today.
Hey, by the way, if you have time, I know a guy that plays his armpits while jumping on a trampoline.
I've been trying to find somebody who can really play their armpits for a while. I know back when I was in grade school, we could all, do a pretty good flight of the bumblebee in our armpits.
And I've been trying to get your executive producer in on this, but I also know synchronized swimming yodelers. So they would be good.
It's the kind of talent that we look for on Chicago's number one morning TV show.
Paul Conrad actually was heard under his breath today saying, well, finally, some of the crap's over. We can get the real stuff in here. Huh? Right?
You know, we got the big shots from our new ownership in town. So we're really trying to put our A material out there right now.
Are they in town today?
I believe so.
Oh, we got to start the show over then.
Yeah, I believe we have a pretty important vice president of something or other in town right now.
They probably don't even know they own us.
She, yesterday when we were doing the segment, when I was introduced to her, she said, oh yeah, I saw the back of your head while you were doing your radio segment.
I don't. How are you supposed to take that?
I take it as she noticed me.
You've been listening to an abbreviated Moron Entertainment. More later from Dean on TV. Thank you.
Bye. The Steve Cochran Show.
Eight. 20, to give you a sense of how serious all of this impeachment talk has become, the president and the White House are refusing to answer to subpoenas, a subpoena being a legal, enforceable request for information related to any sort of investigation. Here's where people, I think, get confused, and I understand why, because it's a confusing process. An impeachment is a political process with possible criminal outgrowth from it. A criminal process has nothing to do with an impeachment. Sounds like contradictory terms, right? Well, the difference is politics is and political process is how you actually do an impeachment. Go back to 1998 and Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was actually able to remain in office because at that point it was the exact reverse that we have now. The House was controlled by Republicans. They pushed forward for the impeachment. They voted for impeachment. That meant they sent the Clinton case to the Senate. The Senate, controlled by the Democrats, voted not to throw him out of office. And he was saved by the skin of his teeth. Now you have the reverse process where the House is controlled by Democrats. They're pushing forward on the impeachment, and the Senate Republicans are in all likelihood going to block it or be able to block it. It doesn't change the fact that there's a constitutional obligation by the Congress, and in this case the House, to move forward. So there is a difference between political and criminal, and that's an important note to make. In the meantime, the letter is, I mean, it's 8 pages long, and it's a little thick in legalese, but there's a ton of politics in here as well, like this. And this comes from the White House personal counsel. As a matter of fact, I want to make sure, is this the counsel to the president? The lines are so gray now because Attorney General Barr is acting as the president's attorney. Pat Cipollone, counsel to the president, yes. So let me just, you know how you like when I read to you. Let me just give you a couple of things from this letter. Many Democrats now apparently view impeachment not only as a means to undo the Democratic results of the last election, but as a strategy to influence the next. If someone saw the pot and the kettle, they're both yelling, "You called me black first," because the influence of the election is exactly what got us to this place and the whole nature of the argument here. And the institutions that we need to protect, the basic foundation of democracy is at risk if you don't. As far as overturning an election, we talked about this earlier. If you were to throw Donald Trump out of office, and it's not out of the question, depending on how threatened Republican senators feel as this thing continues to degrade, Mike Pence would be the duly elected president of the United States for the remainder of this term. That's not overturning an election. Overturning an election has nothing to do with that. We're following the rules as they're stated. Here's more. Your inquiry is constitutionally invalid and a violation of due process. In the history of our nation, the House of Representatives has never intended to or attempted to launch an impeachment inquiry without the majority of the House taking up a political accountability vote. In other words, a full House vote is needed before we go forward. That's also incorrect. There is no legal basis for that being the case. But see, this is where it gets confusing, because the politics of pushing forward on an impeachment cross over into legal challenges of what those politics bring. Does that make sense? It does? You sure?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Makes sense.
Okay. More. The effect of an impeachment is to overturn the popular will of the voters. Well, the effect of an impeachment is to actually remove the person who is not living up to their responsibilities, whether it be at a judge's position or an elected official who is subject to impeachment, or in this case, the president. We must not overturn an election or remove a president from office except to defend our system of government or our constitutional liberties against a dire threat. You could line up people from here to either coast who would tell you that's exactly what Donald Trump is, a dire threat. The full 8-page letter is all over your internets, and I mean all of them, G. Every one of your internets you can find this. Mm-hmm. And you could read it if you choose to. But Pat Cipollone is saying in this letter, the president is not subject to these sorts of investigations and questions, which is exactly why we're in the problem we're in. Texter asks, can you run for president again if you've been impeached? If you've been impeached, I don't know that it's ever been tested, because we've never impeached someone and then done a Senate trial and thrown them out of office. If you are thrown out of office, that's a different story, because then you really you wouldn't be able to run for president again. You certainly couldn't win. 708 texter chimed in So, Steve, you're full of, oh, I can't say that word. That would be wrong. In an 815, impeachment just takes away your powers, not actually throws you out of office. No, impeachment is a public slap in the face to say that we, the members of the House of Representatives, and again, same thing that happened in 98, we, the members of the House of Representatives, feel you are unfit to be the president of the United States, and we are now doing our constitutional duty as a co-equal branch and oversight to throw this over to the Senate. They will now conduct a trial to determine of whether or not you're able to keep your job.
Steve, the Senate has done impeachments of other federal officials, including judges.
Right.
And those federal officials are barred from holding federal office.
Which
again
makes sense, right?
Yes.
Yeah. 815, has anyone noticed Trump's Syria pullout was announced near Putin's birthday? I didn't know that. What a weird birthday present. But, you know, it's not out of the question. At any rate, it's 8:26, and I would like nothing better than to not talk about this anymore. But, you know, we are where we are. Let's switch to the Cubs for a second. The Cubs will interview Joe Girardi today, Dave. Is that accurate?
That's the word, yeah.
You know Joe. I know Joe. Joe's mm-hmm. a Northwestern guy. Yep. Played a little golf with Joe here and there. Fabulous guy.
Great, tremendous guy.
Success with the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Left the Yankees just in kind of a power struggle with the general manager there.
Which is kind of the way he ended up leaving Florida.
Uh-huh. And
team president.
He's the kind of guy, as I understand it, and I don't know Joe that well, but he would like to be the guy in charge of the players on the field and to do the job with the best of his ability. And I think, in general, if you hire the right people and you support them, the best managers get out of the way and let them do their job.
I think they do. I think they do.
So whether or not he feels he would have that with the Cubs remains to be seen. I've not talked to Joe about this, but I assume this is a job he would enjoy having quite a bit.
Well, it was. I think at one time it was definitely a goal for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a native of Peoria, went to Northwestern, played for the Cubs on two occasions, two tours of duty with them. Always, I think, was seen by a lot of people as sort of this would be his ultimate destination. He would somehow end up in the dugout at Wrigley Field, in the home dugout. And
wouldn't he be the leading contender? I mean, the guy's got a track record of winning.
He's got a great track record. I don't think he necessarily is. And I'm not sure that, you know, we don't know this, but he's got a lot of options. I mean, he's going to be...
Sure.
Because he apparently is ready to go back to managing. He's got a lot of teams that are interested, one of them in New York, where he had success with the Yankees. And now the Mets, a team which got themselves back into contention for a while this year and then sort of faded again at the end like the Cubs did. You know, maybe his name is being mentioned there.
Well, they got a lot of great young talent, but they got some crazy ownership problems there.
They do. But... Yeah, you know, is any situation going to be ideal for him?
No situation is ideal.
Right. You could do a lot worse than Joe Girardi.
Did you watch the broadcast at all last night, Dave?
I did.
I felt like he was trying to dispel some of those rumors about him being non-analytical by pushing some serious stats on it. Like,
yeah, he was. He was definitely gay.
That's the rap on him, that he's not he's not a modern
that
baseball
guy. He's more old school.
Yeah.
And that a guy like David Ross might be more what... more in line with what the Cubs want from their manager. Joe Maddon was old school.
It seems to me the answer for the Cubs would be, and this is going to shock you, they haven't called to ask, but the answer to the Cubs would be, you have Girardi be the manager, but you encourage him to have David Ross be a bench coach to learn how to manage. David Ross has never managed.
No.
So
learn how to do it. But a lot of teams have gone with that model now where the guy hasn't managed, but he steps in, and you've seen some guys do a decent job at it. And
what about Davey Martinez? Is that real? Or not Martinez? The Washington manager. What is his name?
Davey Martinez.
It is Martinez. Okay.
Yeah. No.
So what about Martinez? Is he on the list or not?
I don't think so.
I had heard that there was a consideration.
He nearly got fired in Washington this year, but did a great job getting them to the playoffs.
Right.
He's got a history here.
What about Yogi Berra?
I don't think so. Mark Loretta, who
Shoeless Joe coach. Jackson?
What's that?
Shoeless Joe Jackson.
I don't think it's going to be Shoeless Joe. Sorry, Super Joe. But, yeah, I mean, I think they'll end up with a good manager here. They had one, though.
Is it conceivable they could announce a deal today?
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay.
No. And plus, baseball discourages teams from announcing managers when there are postseason games. Well, certainly not during the World Series, but when there are postseason games going on.
All right.
So, but
so everything you need to know is Dave continues to rally from the death grip of a cold live here on the air.
I'm fine. I'm not complaining.
Gee, has a new restaurant to tell you about. Neighborhood Eats coming up here in just a few minutes. First at 8:30. Oh, let's do this.
Hey, Ma! Can we get some meatloaf?
Idly-ho, neighborinos.
We need two big pizzas made. Everything on them.
Hi-ho, neighbor.
Nobody messing in my neighborhood.
Hey, Ma! The meatloaf! We want it now! The meatloaf!
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
I love that. I love that Super Joe put that together for me.
Yeah, there you go. Neighborhood Eats time. G always wants to have something to fall back on because, you know, she's concerned that I may not be here more than the week. So for that reason, she also works for the Chicago Sun-Times and does a wonderful job there with something called Neighborhood Eats, which she also does for us. It's a partnership between the Sun-Times and us. So explain
Absolutely.
What it is.
Okay, so it is where I go around to different neighborhoods in the city of Chicago and also to the suburbs, and I try to feature a locally owned spot. So it can be like a deli, a diner.
Not a chain deal.
Right, not a chain deal, and not somebody that maybe doesn't need my help. So, like, you know, some of these really fancy restaurants that are in the West Loop and River North, nothing wrong with them. Nothing wrong with the Loop, but I'm just trying to feature little mom and pop shops that need the help and maybe are a little bit of a hidden gem.
So you do a video of these folks?
I sure
do. A little interview?
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you also write a story.
I do.
And they appear in the Sun-Times where? I know this is your favorite part of this.
Well, they appear actually physically, a tangible newspaper. Yes, those still do exist. Mm-hmm. You can get that Sun-Times delivered to your home. And in the taste section on Wednesday's paper, it's there, printed. And you can, you know, read your paper while you drink your coffee and fold your paper in half, which people love to do.
And when is it online?
And then it's online at 8 a.m. on Wednesday mornings. And it's under a subsection. Click on the top under more, and then it'll be right there under the grid or the taste section.
If they just search Neighborhood Eats, could they find it?
Yeah,
first?
They should find it. Just be sure to do Sun-Times Neighborhood Eats.
Okay.
So,
and then when do we post these things?
I believe that we post them after the show, after we talk about
it. Yes, indeed. Mm-hmm. So that'll happen again today. Yes, all right. So today's chosen Neighborhood Eats location is what?
And we also post a link to the Sun-Times article on our website. So if you just go to WGNRadio.com, you'll get everything Neighborhood Eats there.
That's perfect, good. Super Joe. Thank you to Super Joe and to our Super Viv. Oh,
right.
I should say Vivacious Viv. Okay, I can't steal Supers. Sorry.
You could say that. The rest of us are still meeting.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Anyway, I went to Kegolani, and I know that's a mouthful.
It's say it again.
Kegolani, and okay. I'll spell it for you. It's K-I-E-G-O-L-A-N-E-E, and basically it's the phonetic spelling of a small town in the state of Oaxaca in Mexico.
Okay.
So, and it's Santa Maria Kegolani, so they have Oaxacan food. And
how does Oaxacan food vary from like traditional Mexican food?
Well, Oaxaca in general is a beautiful place. It's a complete bastion of indigenous culture. So there's a lot of moles. There's a lot of spices.
And I'm an idiot when it comes to this stuff. So sorry about the stupid questions.
No.
Moles are sauces?
Yes. A mole is a very rich, complex, multi-seasoned, often featuring chocolate as well. A lot of people are familiar with like the chocolate mole. And so this is what the Kegolani specializes in. It's on 5004 North Sheridan Road. And the thing that I love about this restaurant is it's a brother and sister and their spouses run this restaurant.
Wow.
And they're immigrants.
Wow, that's risky.
Yeah, right. So
not the immigrant part, the fact that a family's doing this together.
The sister-in-laws work in the morning and the brother-in-laws work at night. And the sister-in-laws come in and they prep all the food. And then they also make from scratch Oaxacan tamales, which differ.
Sounds great.
Yeah. I mean, you know what a tamale is,
yeah,
right?
Of course.
It differs, though, from the tamale you might be familiar with, which has a lot of kind of the dough, the masa or the corn, the maize.
Mm-hmm.
This one has a little less of the maize, the corn base. It's a little more rectangular, a little more flat, a little more square. It's wrapped in plantain leaves that have been grilled, so it imparts that beautiful flavor.
Dave, this sounds like a home run for you.
It does.
There's a smear of that, and then there's a protein, whether it's chunky pieces of grilled pork or shredded chicken or
vegetables.
What's
the Spanish word for schmear?
That I don't know. Okay. We've got to get it. I wish I spoke Spanish. And so they put that all in there with a really heaping spoonful of the mole sauce, whether it's green, red, or yellow.
Do
and they steam it.
Choose for you?
I mean, you can choose.
Oh, you can.
Yeah. But here's the thing. You know what Michelin is, right?
Mm-hmm. Well,
like
no.
Michelin tires,
oh,
right?
Okay, yeah.
Okay, so Michelin tires has a food guide, which most people are familiar with, and it's a fancy guide that
has. And if you get 3 stars,
yes,
you're a big deal.
3 stars, 2 stars, 1 star.
Yep.
But they have a guide that's a lot more accessible for regular everyday folks. It's called the Bib Gourmand List, and that tells you about places that are affordable, really delicious food, and they made that list for 2020. And
wow.
Yeah, that list is out for 2020. There's only like a little over 50 restaurants in the Chicagoland area.
How would you even be up for that when you're a small place?
There's these inspectors that go around, and they're really sneaky. They're like little spies, and they go around and taste the food.
What an honor.
Yeah, so this is a big deal, especially I'm so proud of it because it's a locally owned. It's
sure.
It's, you know, immigrants that have come and made their American dream here, and they've basically built this from nothing, and it's because the food is so delicious, and it's not like what your typical, what you might know as Mexican American fare, because this is very this is Oaxacan food, and so I think it's a wonderful dining experience, and it's something that you can go and know that you are supporting a local business and that you are helping create an American dream, and it's delicious, and you're going to learn something, and your taste buds are going to taste something you've never tasted
before. Any language barriers?
No, actually, you'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's some cool, like, Oaxacan food that's unique. For example, these tamales are different than any tamale you've had. They also have several dishes that feature a Mexican truffle.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, Mexican truffle is like, it's also known as Mexican smut. S-M-U-T. Yep, I knew you would love this. It's like a fungus that grows on corn. This would be a good thing to see if Orion knows
about,
really.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's considered a delicacy, and they incorporate that in a lot of dishes. And of course,
but the smut is what grows on the corn?
Yeah, it's another word for the fungus. But a better way to call it is like a Mexican truffle.
Okay.
So like that's incorporated in a lot of the dishes. This red mole has over 36 ingredients and takes over 6 to 7 hours to cook. So that tells you the complexity of the dish and how incredible it is. And then, of course, there's regular fare. There's like prawns. There's a Cornish hen that's covered with a dark mole. There's enchiladas. There's things that you're familiar
with. By the way, I want everybody to know this. You're doing this from memory and passion. You're not reading notes here.
No.
It's very impressive.
Well, thank you. I care about this. I care about the stories behind food. And food is our language. It's a common language of everybody.
All right. So where is it again?
It is 504 North Sheridan Road.
What's it next to?
Uptown. It's near a, it's up there in the neighborhood with the Green Mill, which is an old jazz bar.
Yeah,
and it's a couple of doors down from a famous bar called Big Chicks / Tweet, which is also another great restaurant, too.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Dave, any questions about this fine food?
No, I think it sounds, she just looked at me like you wanted to
just
add
really
something.
Just really quick, on Thursdays, this is the part that's a hidden gem, is that on Thursdays from 7 a.m. to 1 p.m., they're not open during the day normally, they have these tamales for only $3 each. So that's the hidden gem part of my article.
But how you say they're not normally open? They just make up a bunch of these for Thursdays?
Just for Thursdays. For people to come in, it's a special price, $3 each. And you can come in and have them for breakfast, take one on the road, or you can have one for lunch.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
It was bound to happen, Steve. It was bound to happen. She was going to bring in some sort of neighborhood eats, and now I can't focus on the rest of the show. All I can think about is tamales.
Yeah. Joe, Super Joe, weren't you and I going to open Hole Mole? Or was it Hole Mole 2?
The deuce.
Yeah, yeah. All right, nice job by you.
Oh, well, thank you. Thanks for letting me share.
Sometimes and here at WGNRadio.com.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Come on, sing along. Who's with me? That's all I'm talking about.
It's kind of hard to sing along the song.
If you are traveling abroad anytime soon, I hadn't been out of the country in a while. Dave, you have another one coming up, I know.
Yeah, going to Croatia and Slovenia.
Are you a secret agent?
No, I'm not a secret agent.
The reason I bring it up is you get some perspective on the world that you don't normally get from other places you realize how they look at us. You know what
yes.
I mean?
Yes.
So somebody passed this on to me. It was originally, I think, posted to BuzzFeed. But these are questions that people from other countries have about us. They basically need an American to clear this up. Why do you send each other Halloween cards? You go into a Walgreens right now, you're going to see a huge Halloween card section.
That's funny you say that, because I was in Walgreens yesterday afternoon, and it was the aisle with the Halloween cards was packed.
Right?
Yeah. And it's October, what is it, the 10th?
I never sent today, a Halloween card.
I've never received a Halloween card or sent one.
The only time I ever sent one was to college students. Because they kind of think, you know.
With money.
They love mail.
There always should be cash in.
I said
trick or treat, here's some money.
Yeah, or candy, Halloween candy. It's kind of fun.
Another question foreigners ask Americans. Why is your Walkman on the signs not green?
Oh.
Everywhere else in the world, you think about it. It's green.
What color?
Ours are white.
Oh.
When there's no stop sign, but there is a crossing, can you just walk out on the road? Well, not without being careful.
Well, I mean, I've noticed here, people don't even stop for if you're in a crosswalk.
Another thing that confuses foreigners, why is there so much water in the bowl of the toilet?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, these are things that legitimate questions.
Because they have the two buttons on them.
People have about Americans. What do you mean?
We like to waste water.
The half and the full.
We save it for the dogs and
for
cats.
For your choice of flushing, it's very odd.
Dogs have to drink out of something.
Does every men's room have to have a dedicated lower urinal? Well, that's for little boys. Or short dudes. At what point in a restaurant do you not tip?
Oh, I don't think I've ever not tipped.
All over Prague last week, regardless of the service, and the service was pretty dicey at times.
You did mention that.
Yeah.
They don't tip?
No, but they reminded you that the service charge, the tip is not included. At one point, one guy said, American? I said, yes. He goes, tip not included.
Because traditionally, you hear that when you travel in Europe that you don't tip. I mean, I think that's changed over the course
It has changed.
Yeah, that now they've adopted tipping.
But they don't tip.
As
I
much.
Tip probably more than I should have in Italy. I mean, if you tip 10%, it's considered generous.
Right.
I would tip the customary 20%, and they would be like, can we open the door for you?
Yeah,
they were
exactly.
Like, this man is rich. Rich Dave.
The thing that threw me off about Prague was people just walking by. Excuse me, to ask a question. They wouldn't even look at you.
Really?
Just walk by.
Was it because you were you speaking in Czech?
No, that would have made me adorable. Another question foreigners ask of Americans. Why do you drink root beer?
Oh.
Is root beer specifically an American thing?
I actually have a funny story. If you have time for me. Okay. So speaking of, you know, when my parents immigrated here, they were amazed that there was an entire, this was back in the 1985, 80s, they were amazed that there was an entire aisle dedicated to pet food, because that just didn't exist in South Korea.
Oh, that's interesting.
And so we adopted a kitten, and my mom was, I went to summer camp, and I came back, and my mom was like, the cat's not been eating. I got her this food, but it seems kind of dry. It really just doesn't seem, so we even added water to it. It just doesn't seem like it's right. I don't know. I can't figure it out, but the cat on the bag looked really happy and had a beautiful crown on it. It was cat litter.
Oh. Well, how would you know?
Well, I was like, Mom, this is cat litter. This is for people that keep their cats in their houses.
Right.
But back then, she didn't know.
No, you wouldn't know.
Now she rescues animals. So.
Yeah, she's come full circle.
Yeah.
Another question foreigners ask about Americans. Why are all your dollars the same color? Think about that. Wherever you go, other countries, different colored
that's
money.
That's true.
Yeah.
I like that.
Why is there a $1 bill and a $1 coin? I don't know why that would be confusing, because a lot of countries do coinage.
I don't even see dollar coins. Who uses dollar coins?
Yeah, I don't see them.
I know the vending machines give back dollar coins sometimes, but...
Why do you advertise prescription medicine on TV? I just thought there should just be a channel called the Disclaimer Channel, which just runs the disclaimers. And it would just be a loop of everything I've just told you could kill you.
I know. It's like, you could die, this could fall off, that might fall off, this might never work again.
And
good luck.
Let me grab a phone call here before we run out of time. Doug.
Hey, good morning. How are you all?
Good, man. How are you?
Good. Hey, you were talking about tipping in Europe, and a couple of quick stories. One is just about Sweden. Basically, you just leave the coins. So if you've got coin change, you just leave that.
Okay.
But I was in Poland. I'm there. My wife's from Krakow. So one time I was in Poland, we had pizza in a place, and I knew that service was included. And I told my wife that I wanted to give the girl a tip because she was absolutely excellent. So my wife said, just give her like 5 zloty, which is about a dollar. You give her any more, she'll think you're hitting on her. Well, I gave her a 20 zloty coin. And I swear the girl wrapped her arms around me. I thought she was going to try and take me home. It was the biggest surprise of my wife. My wife's like, why does she love you so much? And I gave her 20 zloty. She goes, oh, okay. She thinks that you're trying to marry her. So.
And then here's the part of the story that's not true. So he left his wife. He married the waitress. And now she's insisting on the tips going up. Hey, man, thanks for listening. I appreciate it. There's a ton of, maybe we'll post this piece because there's a ton of great questions here. Why are you so obsessed with ice? Because there was actually a dispute about being able to get ice in a drink where the bartender told one of the people in our party, no, these are for the other drinks. Mm-hmm. Because I just want ice in my Diet Coke.
Yeah, you can't get ice.
No. Literally, it got like heated. A woman arguing with you. No!
Vomit!
You can't have ice! Patrick Kane's coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll do the news next. First, before that, also next hour, Ro Khan scheduled to appear. I say that because Ro's a very big star, and he's, well, you know, he's a bit of a diva. But Ro is scheduled to appear as well coming up. We'll check in with Dave on the death grip cold that he currently has.
I'm okay.
Dave, we're 3 hours into the show. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling fine, Steve. I'm feeling better by the minute, and thanks for the hot tea.
All right. And we want to remind everyone, because of Dave's illness and because he's contagious, don't even think about switching the station to another station. As soon as you touch that,
you don't want to touch it.
You're going to get this.
Yep.
That's where, I mean, we're just warning you. Just trying to be nice. Nothing to do with me. It's just all about trying to keep you from getting sick. And the Steve Cochran Show, show number 1,464, continues with the news now.
Keith, left point. Back to Gustafson, high slot. To Kane, top of the right circle. He shoots, he scores! Through a maze of players in front of Carter Hart, Patrick Kane with a snipe shot ends up in the top left corner.
Yeah, come on, it's like before, except now we're singing a different song. We have a number of monitors here in studio. Patrick Kane's going to join us in just a second before playing the Hawks music. But we have a number of monitors here in studio, and I was just distracted temporarily because I saw something shiny, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But an anchor for NBC, anchor/reporter, I think she was live in Turkey, was accosted by her son, who was about 4 or 5 years
old,
while she was doing a live hit.
That's adorable.
So that'll be, if it was live, and I'm almost positive it was, if it was live, that'll be all over your viral explanations of things later.
It reminds me of that one video, and of course this is going to be so nondescript, you're not going to know what I'm talking about unless you've seen it, where the British reporter is like doing a live shot from
the kid keeps coming in from the back.
It's so cute. The kid's not as tall as the desk, and it's so adorable.
Yeah. And, you know, in those cases, they try to shoo the child away. The child's already been seen. At that point, just hold on to the child, put your hand on him, and just say, well, this is my son or daughter. And but in the meantime, here's the remaining information you need to know.
I'm amazed. I don't know how working parents do it. It's amazing.
Especially if you're working out of your house, right?
Yeah.
Because that risk is always there. Steve, I have some good news for you as we stand by for Patrick Kane.
Love good news.
Wendy's is back in the breakfast business.
Love it.
Wendy's will have a new maple butter chicken biscuit to fight with Chick-fil-A and McDonald's that now has chicken biscuits. And again, for Dave's edification.
Please explain this to
me. I knew it. That's why I was pointing at him.
The biscuits are not made of chickens. They're made from chickens.
But you can...
Explain it again, Dave.
Biscuits are bread.
What did you just say?
The filling is chicken.
Yeah, it's a biscuit with a piece of chicken in it.
But you can understand
because I haven't eaten one. Explain what you're saying.
I'm chicken biscuits. It sounds like biscuits made out of chicken. I'm sorry.
Like chicken nuggets.
I'm not a fast food connoisseur.
Well, I'm going to have to break it to you, Northwestern. You don't need to be a fast food connoisseur to understand what we're talking about here.
So I'm looking at the chicken biscuit from Wendy's, and it has some sort of sauce or something on the top of it. What do you think that is?
I don't know.
Or is that maple breakfast? Syrup?
You think that's cheese?
Well, it's maple butter.
Oh,
it's maple butter apparently on top of it. But I didn't know Wendy's was back in the breakfast business. They tried it briefly, and I didn't know it was after that.
Yeah, so. I think they've actually tried it a few times. Yeah. This is its latest reincarnation. People do love their fast food breakfasts these days, that's for sure.
As chicken wars continue. Tomorrow night, your Chicago Blackhawks, and you'll hear every minute of Blackhawks hockey here. We are your flagship, and happy to be that for how many years now, Dave? 111.
To Patrick Kane's entire career.
Yeah, how about that? And Canner joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How's everything with you?
I found a picture of you and me on the radio from 2008. I have to say you've aged better than I have.
I don't know about that.
So here's the deal. I was over in Prague with you guys, and I'm at the O2 Arena. And I know that, look, nobody's making excuses here. I just, as a point of reference, that arena was warmer than any hockey arena I'd ever been in. Did you guys have any sense of that?
Yeah, I think so. It was really warm, and even like in the locker rooms, we were kind of wondering why they had like there's like these big heaters in the locker room planted like right against the wall where we're all sitting. So it is what it is. I mean, like you said, you don't really want to make any excuses, but it was definitely a little bit warmer than we're used to.
So for guys at the top of the game, you and the rest of the Blackhawks, what does that do to the ice?
Well, I think it just makes it a little bit slower, a little bit choppier. I think especially as periods wear on and the ice gets a little bit worse, it's maybe a little bit tougher to make quicker, like one-touch plays. I think you really have to settle it down and kind of concentrate on what you're doing with the puck. So maybe it's not as like instinctive or natural to move the puck around. It's just like you got to think about it a little bit more. So. You know, I think obviously both teams play on it. Philly did a little bit better than us, but I think we're like a fast team. You know, we like to play on good ice and we like to move the puck ahead quickly.
Yeah, and part of that can get you into trouble sometime, but if you start thinking about not going quickly, you're going to get into more trouble. But there were some tough turnovers in the wrong end and things like that from passes. The Flyers seem to make the most of it. But for Hawks fans that went into an immediate 911 panic, it's one game, and now you're home for an extended stretch.
Yep. It's almost like we've kind of been waiting around watching all these other teams play. You know, some teams have played four or five games already. We played one, so it's we're in a position where we'll be playing a lot of games in a short amount of time. And like you said, we have a big stretch here at home. We have 7-1 home, so. You know, we really want to take advantage of home rights this year, be a good team at the United Center, use our fans to the advantage, and try to get off to a good start here.
Patrick, good morning. So you got seven straight here at home. How long does it usually take you, or does it take you very long at all, to kind of feel like, okay, you're into the season now, you're into the grind of the 82-game season?
I think probably really after the first couple games here at home. You know, we've been practicing a lot. We've been going through training camp for about a month now. We really only played one meaningful game. Obviously, we had some exhibition games. We played a game in Germany. But, you know, I think everyone's kind of working towards this point in the season, right? Like, we're ready to start playing games. We want to get things going. And this is a fun time, though. You know, you play as many games as you really practice. There's really no more practice time, especially with the amount of games we have and the schedule we have. So, yeah, it's fun. It's exciting. I think the place will probably be rocking on Thursday night, and looking forward to the home opener against San Jose.
Talking to Kaner, Patrick Kane, and there's a lot of new faces on this team again, and there's some chemistry issues that you need to play with guys for a while. So to follow up with what Dave was just talking about, is there a rough amount of time you can judge before you feel like you have chemistry with the new guys?
Yeah, it really should be there already. You know, we've been skating with each other for a while, and
you know, obviously the games from preseason to regular season are a little bit different. The speed is intensified. I think you're playing against better players. So might be a little bit of an adjustment period there, but we've really gone over everything we need to so far, whether it's been systems or the way we want to play. I think throughout training camp, you've been skating with, you know, guys that you're most likely to play with on a line. So you're used to that a little bit. So, I really should be there.
Well, the first goal of the season was scored by Alexander Nylander. And for those who haven't seen him yet, Patrick, give the Blackhawks fans a scouting report what to expect from him.
Yeah, including if you want to slam him. Feel free.
I didn't say that.
He's just like, he's so talented. He's similar to his brother who plays for Toronto in a lot of ways. They're so good on their edges, so good skating that they can escape defenders pretty quickly. Yeah, I think the thing I like about him is he wants to learn. He wants to get to that next level and be a good pro. And I think throughout preseason, he's probably our best player. Yeah, big things ahead for him. He's got all the talent in the world, so I would expect big things from him in the future.
Now, you're in a position now, 10-plus years in the league, and one of the best in the game. Teams spend a lot of time strategizing on how to play against you. If you start getting doubled up and stuff, it means that somebody else is open. Strategically, do you sometimes welcome that so somebody else can get the puck and, you know, has a little less on them?
Yeah, I think, especially as time goes on, like I came into the league and I was pretty much, I scored a lot of goals in junior, but if for whatever reason, it translated to me like being more of a pass first guy in the league. And, you know, after a couple of years, you really start to realize you need to be dynamic out there. You need to have, like, a different threat. So I really tried to work on my shooting and, like, a shoot-first mentality. And I think once that kind of evolves, teams have a tougher time defending you. So, yeah, but like you said, when teams start focusing on you a little bit more, you know, you can maybe bait them in a little bit and try to find that open guy and get some more chances for your line rates.
Jisuke is here, and I don't know, G, have you met Patrick when you were over at Windy City Live?
I did. The very first time they won the Stanley Cup, they all came over, so it was pretty awesome.
So you know Patrick from that perspective, and G is trying to become the biggest hockey fan in town. She loves hockey. She doesn't really get hockey yet. And she,
I love
words,
hockey.
Her words, not mine. But what do you want to ask Patrick?
Okay, this may not make any sense, Patrick, but I'm going to try, okay? So here you go.
Okay.
You know, of course, you're going to produce no matter when you play or how long you play or where you are. But I seem to be reading a lot about that we're relying too much on the top line guys and you to score. So what do we have to look forward to in terms of the bottom six forwards and how much they're going to contribute offensively this season? And won't that take the pressure off of you as well?
Kaner, that's a good question.
That's a question.
Great question.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you.
She might be trying to take your job
based. Yes. I'm going to take the day off. That was tremendous.
Thanks, Patrick.
yeah, it's a great question. I think, I think the management did a great job with that this year going on and trying to get some depth guys that can produce and, you know, chip in a goal here or there, especially when they're playing less minutes on the third and fourth line and really help our team out. But I think those guys tend to be more like penalty killers and guys that can control the puck and keep the puck in their zone, kind of chip it in and go get it back and create some momentum that way. So I think management did a great job going to get those guys this year and should help us out a lot.
Let me get one more in here for Dave, and then I got a question that I was asked by everyone on the trip to Prague about the game. First year's day.
All right, so last year you talked about kind of getting away from weight training and segueing into...
I know I have.
Hard to tell, Steve, but
right.
But you kind of got into more sort of working on being flexible and different kind of body movement exercises. Is that where your focus was this past off season as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as you get older, I think you kind of realize what works for your body, and I think for me personally, it's been great. I know that, you know, when I was younger, and maybe some younger guys now on the team, you're still kind of growing into your body and trying to work up your base, like what your body's potentially going to be. And I've already reached that point. So for me, it was all about like just trying to feel better up there and trying to be able to move. You know, I think that's the biggest thing. I didn't want to be stiff or tight out there. I wanted to be able to move in and out of guys, have good agility, be able to move my body in different ways when I needed to call on it. So, yeah, I did that again this summer. Feel really good. You know, it's been great for me the last couple of years, and happy with the switch.
See, Steve hasn't quite reached that point yet.
No, but I am. Listen, I will spend a good portion of the afternoon doing my 5-pound curls. You know that.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
And you know what? You got to commit to the burn.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, feel the burn. All right, Cantor, before you go, the one thing I heard from everybody at the game, because you know how diehard Blackhawk fans are, best fans in the business, as you've noted again and again and again, but everybody's going, why so many passes on the power play? Somebody shoot the friggin' puck. That's one quote. So explain either the strategy behind it, or would you like to see less passing?
One of the things we did in previous years, we really tried to shoot the puck right away. I don't know if that's the best way to go about it. I think we had a lot of success last year when we were more patient in the zone, move the puck around quickly, and then things seemed to open up that way. So that's where we have had success. You know, I think Jeremy came in and did a great job of fixing the power play last year. We put a good unit together with, you know, myself, DeBrincat, Taser, Strom in front of the net, and then Gustafson up top, and we really seem to have success. So I think one of the things we're looking to do is draw even more penalties. You know, we'd like to get on the power play more because we feel like we have that attribute this year that can really help us win games. And like we look at the game against Philly, we had like maybe two power plays. We were 1-for-2 on the power play. Mm-hmm. So always trying to improve in that for sure. I think we can be one of the top teams in the league with our talent. So this is the year to do it.
Gainer, great talking to you, man. I appreciate the time.
Okay, thanks for having me.
All right, see you, bud. Thanks. I'm surprised, Dave, you didn't bring up the bowling shoes incident, as you like to call it.
I do like to bring that up, but I figure he'll be on with us again later in the season. I want to.
I don't know what this
something.
Is about.
Tell her, Dave, you want me to.
Oh, well. You go, well...
Okay. During the commercial break, or...
No, I think it should be set on the air. Duncan Keith's bowling event, and Steve got on the elevator, and...
After the event,
and Patrick Kane was on the elevator.
Okay.
And, Steve's shoes were not on his feet because his bowling shoes were.
Oh, got it.
And I was with my daughter. She'd never been more proud. Dad, in front of Patrick Kane? Come on! I had forgotten to take my bowling shoes back. Or is the truth that I just like the way they felt and looked?
It would have been like if Kaner was wearing his skates on the elevator.
Oh, that's fair. You know what? That's fair.
That is a good analogy.
That is fair.
Yes.
Yeah. So Patrick Kane had a couple of Blackhawks personnel gently lead me back to get my shoes and then follow me to the car to make sure I could get home. 9:24. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Steve Cochran Show continues. Blackhawks Radio right here on 720 WGN. So the biggest show on television is still This Is Us, right?
I watched it last night.
Oh, don't tell me I haven't watched it.
I won't.
And that Million Little Things is also big.
Oh, I haven't started that yet.
But This Is Us is the one that it's the bank for NBC that everybody talks about. Here's why I bring it up. I don't watch it with regularity at all. As a matter of fact, I don't know that I've seen an entire episode, but I'm familiar with the premise and the characters and all that.
You cry a lot?
Not during the show, just in general. but when I see it now, I sense more whining than I had before. Is anybody on that show happy?
From the characters?
Yeah.
Well,
is it me, or is it more soap opera-y than it used to be?
Once in a while, somebody's happy. I guess they're never all happy at the same time, that's for sure.
I guess they need that bit of conflict and angst now that they've kind of established who they are. But I think there's...
You feel like it still works. And the reason I bring it up is I was a big Modern Family fan.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that funny anymore.
Yeah, I guess after a while, I mean, you got to keep putting new things, new conflict in it to
That's
make
like
it.
10 years of a TV show is a long time.
But can I tell you, okay, so I'm not going to give anything away, but mm-hmm. I loved one of the plot ideas last night. It's because it's about, you know, one of the couples, the woman is, she's just had a baby, and so she's overweight, and she was overweight even before the baby, and her husband now is super thin, and he was hiding, he was keeping it secret that he was working out at the gym.
Because he didn't want her to feel that.
And now she feels even more, you know, she feels insecure about the fact that he hid it from her, and she's, you know,
eating more.
Right, and she's at home taking care of the baby. So, I, you know, that happens a lot in relationships, where one person starts, you know, getting really super physically fit, and the other person maybe isn't that into it. So,
but then you have to find a way to encourage that person to be as healthy as they can be, because didn't that character have a heart attack?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah.
See, I know more than you think I do.
And he had a breakdown, too, didn't he? He's had a couple of different issues.
Who hasn't had a breakdown?
Yeah, on that show.
It's 9:30. Let's do the headlines. You know, Chicago's had a history of great personalities on the radio. This is always the best radio personality city in America. No matter where I was being fired from in America, I always looked at Chicago and said, man, if I could ever get to Chicago. And in 1994, I got to Chicago.
And look.
I was thrown out in 96. I came back in 97. Thrown out in 99. Came back in 2000. Been here, you know, ever since. This is home. This is where my kids are raised. And it's an honor to sit in this chair. Where you had the likes of Wally Phillips and Bob Collins and Spike Odell. But I'll tell you what else we have. Every afternoon, got one of the great names in Chicago radio. And just to tell you how old he is, which he'd never admit to. But Ro Khan is 96 years old. He has been on the air. Well, Marconi actually was one of his interns. But I'm a big Ro Khan fan. I'm being very serious now. I'm a big Ro Khan fan. I think the show sounds as good or better than ever. And if you haven't heard it lately, you ought to be listening. How's that for an intro?
Wow. What did I do? Was there something? What does he need, G? Does he need a ride somewhere? What's going on?
I feel bad because I'm sitting here. Do I need to wax poetic about Ro as well? Because
no,
he's good on TV, too.
He's not. Television is, you know, where he drinks. But no, I think we need to recognize how lucky we are to have Ro Khan and Anna and Kevin. And by the way, you're a traffic superstar. Would you like to name her?
Lauren Lapka.
She and her family were in Prague. I think they may have shot me with some sort of tracking dart because I'm in Prague for 4 days. It's not that big a city. I ran into Colleton, the coach, in front of a mini mart in front of about, you know, with a million people around. Never saw Lapka or her family.
Huh. I thought they said they ran into you.
Nope.
And that you owed them money. I can't remember exactly what
how
it
many
was
crowns
they
did they claim. So anyway, as I do, I'm off track here. But anyway, Ro, I'm a fan. You know that.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm a fan of yours, as you know. I wouldn't be a GN if it weren't for you.
No, I helped. I certainly didn't make the final decision. Oh, I saw that guy too. Jimmy DeCastro and his lovely wife Annie were in Prague too.
You said they were going to be riding horses in Austria.
Yeah, did I tell you this, Ro? DeCastro and Annie are doing the Sound of Music tour.
Oh, I do not doubt this.
Yeah, they went through. Jimmy's got it all planned out for their anniversary, going through Austria and through all of these. Well, I don't, you know, wherever Julie Andrews and the kids went, that whole thing.
That is a good husband.
They're just
what
climbing
a
mountains.
Beautiful trip to plan.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm the only person on the planet Earth that didn't like that movie.
I don't know. The Nazis weren't big fans of it.
Well, I mean, anything that makes a Nazi look bad, I'm pretty much for. But with the Nazis and then the singing, it just felt weird to me.
Don't bring it up to Wendy. She's never seen the movie.
Yeah. Is that right?
Nope.
I thought it was a law in America
Bill
that you had to
see. Bill
gives
her heck every day because she hasn't seen it.
You know what? To me, it was like, you know, what if Schindler's List were a musical? Right? It just didn't. Didn't really work for me.
The juxtaposition of the drama and the Nazis versus heroes are alive. Yeah, that whole thing. Yeah.
Right, they're trying to get away from a concentration camp, you know. And the whole thing's bad. I don't know. It's beautiful though. She's wonderful, and the hills were alive.
So, how are you?
Couldn't be better.
Well, tell me something good.
Well, let's see. What do we have?
Tell me something good.
We, you know, it is an interesting. I have to say. That the last couple of weeks, have been the weirdest news mix of things and things to talk about that I could possibly imagine. Right? You got crazy stuff going on in Washington. You got crazy stuff going on here. And I think one of the things that that's happening here that we don't even it's happening like a slow motion crash coming at us. Do you realize that literally like half of City Hall is about to be arrested?
Well,
it's going to happen right on our watch.
Well, I did notice it was a very bad day yesterday for Red Burke, but you're telling me there's more to come.
Oh, a lot more to come. I mean, when you saw all the stuff that's going on, with Martin Sandoval being taken, them going into his office yesterday, they announced that they've got they dropped 40,000 pages, 40,000 pages and 100 discs of information on Ed Burke's lawyers, and said, "You got 90 days. Here's our evidence."
I want to know who the high level informant is. Who's helping?
Well, somebody. Don't you think, Ro, it's a series of flippers? It's like a bunch of people flipping, and there's such an intertwined network of trouble there that it just catches more and more people.
Yeah, well, you got to look at the raft of people who've been taken in, over the last number of years, heading up. But I think some of it just tells itself. I think they may have gotten a roadmap, and which often is how these investigations go. You get a roadmap, and then boom, they're like, oh. Let's go get to go to that server, go to that particular office where there's going to be other paperwork. This is the file cabinet where there's stuff in it. Listen, the stuff was happening before our very eyes. And, like a lot of what goes on now in the world, this stuff happens right in front of us. And we're like, oh, that's okay, because it seems normalized, but it's not. Like the fact that Ed Burke was representing people in tax cases while he was sitting on the committee that was overseeing whether or not it was okay to tax people. Now, does anybody stop and go, maybe we shouldn't have that?
How could that go wrong? I mean, come on.
Right. And Ed Burke, over the years, right, we've interviewed him. His wife is considered one of the, great heroes of Chicago. She was one of the founders of Special Olympics. She's the Chief Justice of the Illinois Supreme Court and a beloved figure, right? But yet, this whole thing was happening, in that same household, right? It's like that you can't just look at Chicago. I think a lot of people have. A lot of the city fathers have looked at Chicago as a gigantic orange tree. And they take the oranges off the tree and they rind them. A judge once told me this. They rind them. They eat the pulp. They plant the seeds. And it's their tree. But it's really our tree.
I wonder what their conversations have been like.
That was really deep. Now, you worked with Ro in television. Was he ever that deep on set on TV?
There's two Ros from my personal experience. Okay. I mean, there's this very... You also can be very prose-like and poetic wax poetic and very
and
eloquent.
And then a complete wackadoodle.
Very eloquent. And then he can go on his rant. And then the angrier or more upset he gets, the more it goes up an octave and then up an octave.
And then eventually... And then eventually only Shih Tzus can hear what he's saying.
Only dogs can hear when he's... Right.
Dolphins.
That's when he's really upset.
Well, I have a story for you that Dave Ennenbrook today, bro.
Uh-oh.
Let's go live to Dave now, who's been playing hurt all morning. Dave's got a cold. And we feel he's germed up this studio enough that your show's going to be sick.
Oh, no. I know where he sits. That's Anna's seat. That's going to be bad.
Yeah.
No, I have disinfectant wipes right here. I've been cleaning everything off.
Clean your face off with those.
The Wells Fargo Center in Philadelphia, where the Flyers play, has unveiled the first ever Rage Room. Let's go live to Dave in Philadelphia. Dave, what do you have?
Well, here at the Wells Fargo Center, where the Philadelphia Flyers open their home schedule tonight against the New Jersey Devils after going to Prague and beating the Blackhawks there. We're going to leave that part out. They are unveiling the Disassembly Room, the first ever Rage Room inside a major professional sports arena. There, fans, for a price, may take out their frustrations by breaking various objects with bats and sledgehammers provided in the rage room. There will be additional incentive
as well, Dave? Isn't there some sort of additional incentive if they're playing a particular team? What do they have about that?
Some of the objects will actually have the logo of the opposing team on them.
Do they really need to encourage this, Dave? I mean, doesn't this happen naturally in the parking lot?
In Philadelphia Row?
Yeah.
I mean, of all places?
Yeah, this is a bad idea.
You get these people fired up to attack that logo and then have them walk outside where innocent fans with that logo are trying to get to their car.
But keep in mind, remember who their mascot is.
Gritty.
So, I mean, this whole idea is kind of gritty.
Oh, I'm going to say something pretty controversial.
What's that?
I saw Gritty in Prague.
Yes, you liked him.
Gritty can dance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Gritty can dance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, but Gritty, I mean...
Dumbest mascot costume ever, but Gritty can dance.
Gritty kind of looks like the Jewel... Wasn't there like a Jewel Osco mascot or something?
There was.
Yeah,
there was.
The Gritty looks like that mascot.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Both kind of frightening, because you know I'm afraid of people and full, yeah.
Anyway, you get for $35 per person or $60 for groups of two.
Like with your kids.
Yeah, to go in, you take your kids in, and you have 5 minutes to smash items. You're given 1 5-gallon bucket of smaller breakable items and 1 medium-sized item to break.
The Jules mascot was named JoJo. Super Joe just told me.
Look at you.
Wonder why he remembers it.
Look at you.
Super Joe.
All right, Ro, what are you doing today?
I would just comment on that for 1 second. That would be like having an open bar at an AA meeting, right? Isn't that
it just makes zero sense
because you're adding to what's really the problem in the first place. They're violent and thuggy and all of those things in the stadium. Do you remember when the Hawks won the Stanley Cup in 2010, it was at their stadium, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was against the Flyers, the mystery puck.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget Rocky Wirtz telling the story. And Rocky Wirtz, he's an owner. And, you know, this is the thing. It's a beautiful, you know, I mean, this is the NHL is a beautiful institution, and it's a respectful institution. They all wear suits. And Rocky himself is like, I don't know how we're going to get out of here. Right? Because he had to get through the very upset Flyers fans.
Right.
So
and Rocky led a camp out in the Flyers Blackhawks suite with heavily armed protection. All right, man. Thank you. That's Rokund, and we are back in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming up on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
And we'll never be royal. It's the one in our blood. That kind of luck just ain't for us. We crave a different kind of buzz. Let me be your ruler. You can call me Queen Bee. And baby,
the Steve Cochran Show at 9:55. Bill and Wendy in moments. Tomorrow on the program, we got plenty of politics for the typical Thursday brouhaha. But tomorrow we may have more information on the Ed Burke mess just referenced by Ro Khan. Holy mackerel. Strap onto something. The good times are just beginning. It is Bill and Wendy time. What are you guys doing on the program today?
We're going to play the tape back, Steve, from a few moments ago when you used the word brouhaha. So we're going to play that back.
Is that the actual highlight?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Joe, how much time do I have here? I got a minute, don't I? Yeah, so we still have a minute. So what else is happening?
All right.
Great news for Bill Leff about Toys R Us.
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Yeah.
It's coming back.
Maybe they're coming back, maybe.
Oh.
I would think Toys R Us is an insult to you. Because the things you collect are so specific.
Oh, right. No, it's a mecca to me.
Oh, well, you got to go to Prague then, because I thought about you in Prague because I walked by a place called the World's Greatest Toy Store, and there's a toy store there with nothing but European cool toys and collectibles.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll go there.
Yeah. I mean, you should leave now.
Do they take checks?
I get it. You're good.
That's good.
He's winking.
I got to talk to you about your definition of good.
I'm easy. What can I say?
Tomorrow on the program. Oh, I talked about that already. Friday. Oh, you know who else is on the program tomorrow?
Who's this, Steve?
We have a brand new Blackhawks expert we're going to debut.
Oh. Tomorrow.
His name is Jerry Most. How old is Jerry? 7? I think he's 7. He's 7 years old.
But he knows the Blackhawks.
Inside out.
Is that right?
Hockey. We've already got a Bulls expert who's, I think, 10.
Yeah.
So we're going in the right direction here.
That's fantastic.
Can't wait.
Bringing in the youngers. Time for the news.